Steve, thanks. Wendy, this is a song called
You were bebopping.
I couldn't
to
help
it.
Myself. I could not help myself. Hi, everybody. It's us. It's Bill and Wendy. We have two shows for you today. One now, and then one later on in the day. We hope you'll listen and enjoy both of them.
Hope I can make both of them.
Do what you can do.
All right.
If you can't make them, I understand. I think everyone will understand. But you know, do your best to hit both of them. I wanted to talk about an awkward moment from yesterday's show that I think only you and I are privy to. I don't, unless you were here in the studio, you probably didn't get this. I don't think much of it made the air, but it was an awkward moment. I'll give you a quick background on it. We had pop sensation Moby on the show yesterday, and you and I had interviewed Moby roughly 20 years ago at Q101. We were doing mornings at Q101, and he came in, and he was a very nice man then, and he's just as nice a man now. Very gifted performer, great musician. And Kevin went out to meet him in the green room. The way it works is the guests come in, Kevin leaves, and escorts them into the green room and says, Bill will be here. Wendy may or may not be here.
But you know, welcome anyway.
Welcome anyway. We hope she's here. And then offers them water, and we don't have water. So that's awkward.
Seriously.
Yeah.
This is so embarrassing.
Whatever. All right. So that happened. So Kevin came in and looked scared, right? He looked a little petrified, and we said, Kevin, what's wrong? I thought Moby was in some sort of an accident or something. And he said, don't touch Moby. And we said, why don't touch Moby? And Kevin shook his hand or tried to shake his hand, and I guess it didn't go very well.
What happened?
So, well, yeah, I was welcoming them in the door, and his escort, I shook
Jonathan.
His hand, Jonathan, and then Moby comes in. And Moby, he was kind of fidgeting with like his wallet a little bit too, so I went to...
He was trying to tip you.
Well, that'd be great, I wish.
Yep.
So, yeah, I made the motion to shake his hand, and then he kind of did, like, he, like, looked up, looked at it, and then did, like, a half, like, moved his hand towards me and kind of, like, almost tapped it but didn't actually touch me. And so that gave me the impression that maybe he doesn't, like, maybe he's got, like, a touching thing and he's not into it.
You know, there's people like Howie Mandel does not, refuses to shake hands for germ reasons, and there's other people who are like that.
Can I just ask you, did that happen after he started blowing up the glove on his head, or is that why he started blowing up the glove on his head, because he had gloves?
I think it was simultaneous. I don't remember the exact history, but it was probably around the same time.
Because no one else really did that, and I'm wondering if he carried latex gloves around with him and thought, since I'm a germ freak, maybe I'll do something fun with them.
Maybe, possibly.
All right, that was just an aside.
So Kevin comes in, do not touch Moby. Don't do it. All right, so then when Moby came in moments later, he walked in.
Did you see me do like a triple handshake, double take, almost take it back?
We didn't know what to do.
I shouldn't have said anything. I know. The whole exchange was awkward. That's my fault. It was funny, though.
Well,
for you.
So the whole Moby Mojo thing was derailed before it even started?
It was. Did you do
that to him, too, or were you watching me? Because I went to go to shake hands, and then I brought my hand back, and then I'm like.
Because of the way our society has trained us, when you meet somebody, even though we had met him before 20 years ago, he comes in, he's standing just a yard away, and there's that moment that is dictated where you go, well, this would be the time where I'd shake this man's hand. But based on what Kevin said, I don't want him to be afraid. I don't want him to leave. I don't want to scare him or anything like that. So there was that. There was just like, well, my hand is here if you want to shake it, and if not, that's fine too.
Well, I did it first, so you should have known at that point when we made contact, Moby and I.
And how did he react?
Perfectly
seemed fine.
Yeah.
Seemed okay.
Because I just kissed him on the top
you
of his head. And he was cool with it.
You kissed him on the top of his head. But then I'm thinking, what would Moby have against Kevin? Why would it just be Kevin's hand that would scare him?
I don't know. Maybe it smelled like lobster. Because I'll tell you, yesterday you guys paid $100 for a lobster roll.
$17, but that's
it was delicious.
You were raving about it. And then when I walked out, just before Ro was coming in, I go, oh my God, it smells like somebody put raw fish in the garbage. What is that? And then lo and behold, the thought bubble, I have one a week, popped up over my head. And I said, oh my God, they had lobster rolls.
But I don't think that was it, because you know me and you know Kevin, there wasn't the smallest speck of lobster left over.
You licked the foil clean.
There was no evidence that we had lobster.
Hmm.
I think it was just a product of, like, literally he was messing with, because I think he had to have his ID out to get checked in, so he was, like, putting it back in.
Did you think the
timing was just weird.
Did he think you were going for his wallet?
No, but, like, I wish you could have seen the weird, Like he motioned both hands toward me, but didn't actually touch me. And that was like his way of shaking hands, I guess.
It was a movement toward you as though you were going to shake
hands.
Like
he was acknowledging me. Like, oh, yeah, I see what you're doing.
I could just see Kevin, a musician who's just met Moby, and he comes in the studio. Don't touch the Moby.
Well, as he comes in, you know, I complimented his shirt. He was wearing an Agnostic Front shirt, which is a famous punk rock band.
But, Steve, you didn't see this. While Moby was here, people from upstairs, our bosses came by.
That's what I heard,
And several people from upstairs came by. And with each one, I was like, uh-oh, there's going to be that awkward moment. But with each one...
Just Kevin.
Sometimes Moby extended it, like as they were walking through, Moby extended his hand as if to say, I'm the friendliest musician you'll ever meet. If you want to shake my hand, here it is. Have
at
it.
He hugged Sarah from Promotions.
He did.
Next time I'll just, unless I get explicit, like, don't touch me directions, I'm not going to say anything.
Just say, dude, I've extended my hand.
Well, I'm not
going to
say
doing?
That either. Hey, jerk. No, I'm not going to do that.
Don't leave me hanging,
right,
Moby.
Right. That is a catchphrase that we are going to now get right out there.
Please.
Don't leave me hanging, Moby.
Say that for
we
now
will see bumper stickers by the end of the day.
Poor Kevin.
Yeah, don't tell us stuff like that till afterwards. Like, see how it goes with us? Because that got in my head.
But by the way, don't make eye contact with Rich Lankoff. He hates
do not. It. Do not. But... To Kevin's point, if I were Kevin, part of his job is to ready you and me in a situation like that. It's like, I don't want them to experience what I just experienced. If you're even thinking about doing a handshake with Moby, reconsider now.
Yeah, and he was doing that. He was doing his job very well there.
I think he was.
Thank you.
I think you were, Kevin.
And also, Daniel likes to be called Mr. Pants Boy.
Mr. Pants Boy? That's awkward.
So, go ahead and address him like that.
Did you make that up on the fly?
Yep.
That was good.
Did you say fly?
Because of the pants. All right,
no.
We need to take a break, but there's a lot more show.
Fun like this stuff.
Don't leave Moby hanging, Wendy. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Hey, it's Moby. Don't leave me hanging, Moby. I want everyone to say that. That can be our password if we ever have a private clubhouse.
Right. It's a very popular catchphrase. Remember years ago, I said, let's start saying get her done. And you're like, what does that mean? And I go, I don't know. Let's just start saying it. It'll take off like crazy. It'll be on T-shirts and boats.
who started that?
That is the cable guy. Larry the cable guy.
Oh, my God. Really?
Yeah. You know, I know him. Dan Whitney is his name. Sorry. Spoiler alert. Larry the cable guy
isn't
a real
guy.
No. His name is Dan Whitney. When I did stand up, I used to work with Dan, and he would come in and he had about four or five different characters that he would do. Like he would do regular stand up, and then at the end he would do a few minutes of one of these characters, and one of them was Larry the Cable Guy. And here's the best advice I ever gave to anybody. I wouldn't do that cable guy thing. It doesn't really work. It's
yeah,
not really
great advice.
Was
Bill.
That solid advice?
You should be an agent.
Right. Hey, Michael Jordan, I don't think basketball's your thing. I'd look for something else. I don't know. I don't think the basketball thing's going to work for you.
I did throw an aside out there wondering about Howie Mandel and the glove.
Yeah.
Somebody said that since he was on St. Elsewhere, he had gloves with him.
No, that his glove thing came
preceded
before
that. I
St.
Thought
Elsewhere.
So. Can't
I know
always
it
believe
did.
Texts.
Because I saw him do stand-up at Who's on First in Elmhurst. And at some hotel downtown before he was very famous.
Just you and he in a room?
Yeah. I know that seems lonely, but it was a different world back then, Wendy. This is a different world we lived in.
Was it at least a suite?
Yeah, it was a nice room. It was a pretty good sized room. Yeah.
Awesome.
Adjoining room if you wanted it. And he did the glove thing then, and that was before he was Wayne Fiscus on St. Elsewhere.
I thought so. And somebody, a couple of people have said he stopped doing the club thing the glove thing because it hurt his sinuses.
Oh, that's possible.
It would.
Yeah.
It's pretty tight fit.
Yeah, it's very tight fit. It's very tight fit. He was a good guy. I got to talk to him, but at the time, I didn't think much of him not touching other people, but you know, there's people that are, I don't know if that even is that germophobia? Are you a germaphobe?
Yeah.
If that's what it is, that is, yeah.
I just call that monk.
Yeah.
That
right.
was a great show for about a week. I mean, I really enjoyed it a little longer than that,
yeah.
But I kind of gave up on that.
You just gave it the 1 week and that was
Tony
it.
Tony Shalhoub, maybe a month.
All right.
And someone else texted us at this number, 312-981-7200. Per Wikipedia, which you know how we feel about Wikipedia.
Sometimes it's accurate.
Beth Howland died.
Beth Howland was the... I believe, the youngest waitress of the three on Alice.
Vera.
She was Vera, right.
She was not Flo Kiss My Grits.
No.
She was not Vic Tayback, whom I miss greatly.
No one is Vic Tayback.
Did you see who her husband is?
Beth Howland's husband?
Yeah.
No.
Charles Kimbrough?
No, really, from Murphy Brown.
How about that?
Murphy Brown.
Right.
He's very talented. His sister lives here in town. She does voiceover work. She's an actress.
All right. Well, Beth Howland, who played Vera on Alice, dead at 74.
Wait, she was 74. That doesn't make sense.
Yeah, but somebody said she survived by a daughter from her previous marriage to actor Michael J. Pollard.
Oh, wow. That's an obscure actor. He was in a bunch of movies in the late 60s and early 70s. You'd recognize him in a second if you saw him.
And she was in something with actress Jennifer Warren.
Yeah.
It was an HBO documentary in 1988 saying You Don't Have to Die. It was about a boy's battle against cancer that won an Academy Award for Best Short Subject Documentary.
Oh, wow.
She was my least favorite waitress, I've got to tell you. Well, she bugged me.
What?
Wait a minute,
you ruined this eulogy.
I know.
He just made me look up Michael J. Pollard. I didn't think anyone would marry that guy.
Based on what?
He's the guy who looked like the Mad Magazine.
Yeah, like Alfred E. Newman. If they ever made a movie about Alfred E. Newman, Michael J. Pollard would have been the actor.
But this is the sad part about this. Howland died December 31st of lung cancer in Santa Monica, California. There was no announcement, no funeral, no memorial
Zero
service.
Until
so we're just finding out now.
And then I think the saddest part is you saying that she was the least favorite of your waitresses.
Well, I
there.
Loved them all, but if you had to pick a favorite. And you know what else is pretty sad?
What?
Is, you know, we were talking about Linda Lavin, and you said, is she still alive?
No, I think she's gone.
No,
right?
She's not.
She's still alive? All right.
She will be now because of you.
No. I was sure she had died.
I thought so too, Bill.
Oh, no.
She's 78. She's living in Portland, Maine, and we'll have her on by the end of the day. Kevin, you'll get a little tip if that happens.
Kevin, if booking her, don't mention that I thought that she had died, please. I'm still mad at her because on the show, I'm mad at Linda Lavin. And here's why. On the show Family, she
was...
Sada
Thompson?
Was Sada Thompson, the actress who never smiled once, ever. She had an affair with James Broderick, the father on Family, and I'm still holding a little bit of a grudge, even though
house
I know
house wrecker.
Yeah, she's a home wrecker, so I'm a little bit upset with her.
Maybe that's why Christy McNichol never returned my calls.
That's why
she was cute, little buddy.
Yeah.
The tomboy. That's what I liked. I identified with her.
Yeah.
Linda Lavin has been working like crazy.
I still see her. Wasn't she in The Sopranos for a little while?
Yeah, you said she was dead.
Well, but The Sopranos were about 10 years past already, almost.
She's been in The Good Wife. She's been in Bones. She's been in Mom.
Oh, so she's working pretty steadily.
Manhattan Night, and she is...
Was she in Manhattan Night? I didn't know that.
How to Be a Latin Lover, she's filming right now. She's playing the part of Millicent.
Excellent. All right, good.
It's a good role.
She is far from dead.
Right.
You're usually really in tune with who's around and who
isn't. I usually am. I don't know. Maybe because of... my bitterness towards her breaking up the Lawrence family on Family. I'm not hoping she's dead. That's the last thing I'm hoping. I just assumed she was because she tore that family apart on that episode.
Remember when Willie left the back door open and the house was robbed?
Yes. Yes, I do remember
that.
That's
the only episode I really remember.
That. We watched, my family and I watched Family every week in hopes that that would be the week that Sada Thompson would smile. We would all sit there and go, look, this is going to make her smile. They got her a Christmas present. This is going to make her smile. Nope.
Nothing.
She would never smile. Not on one episode.
He should have tickled her.
I know.
Just to see.
Right.
And that could have been written in.
She wouldn't have smiled.
What are you doing?
Smile free.
Is Abe Vigoda still alive?
No. Nope. Sad. But
God
nope.
rest his
nope.
soul.
All right. We have to take a break. Steve has the news. And then there's all kinds of stuff coming your way next. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
How much is that doggy in the window?
Woof, woof.
The one with the waggly tail. How much is that doggy in the window?
Woof, woof.
I do hope that doggy's for sale.
There's a reason behind this song, but I'm so enjoying your duet with Patti Page that I'm
afraid. I've always wanted to sing with her. This was my moment.
Your dream came true. I'm going to warn you right now, this is weird. Now, you and I have discussed some things on the show in the past that have been just a little bit off-center. This is weird. Listen to what's going on in England. the UK channel, that's one of their big networks, the UK channel, well, actually, the UK
channel,
the UK channel, is the American version of the BBC, of BBC One and BBC Two. What they do is they take the shows that are on in England, the best shows, the one with the most notoriety, and they send them here in the US, and that's the UK channel.
And this is one of the best
shows? Yeah. Well, it's not one of the best. It's one of the strangest. The UK channel is going to the dogs with its latest bizarre documentary entitled The Secret Life of Human Pups, which, as you might expect, follows a community of men who are not content with just owning a canine, but they want to be one. I'm going to stop the story for just a little bit. I saw a clip from this. What you have here is guys, grown men who should know better, who dress and act like dogs.
They want to do it doggy style. Have you quit?
Yeah.
What happened to you?
I'm on break. Kevin, I'm going to go to the store.
Is this? Get some milk bones.
Right.
Now, wait a minute. Oh, boy, that's not good either. Is this the Dalmatian guy that was in the, that I was looking over your shoulder at,
There's
Kevin?
There's a picture that Kevin has of a man who has gone to great
That's not
lengths.
Related to the story, though. I don't want to.
Oh, okay.
Oh, that's separate? Because there's...
No, it is. I'm kidding.
Oh, okay,
oh. No, that's just a friend of mine. He's in my band,
it's
Fade.
My dating profile.
Man's best friend is the most popular pet in the UK, with animal charities from the RSPCA counting 8.5 million dogs across the country of England last year.
Well, that's believable. A man's best friend, not to
right.
sleep with.
Right. Well...
I mean, maybe to cuddle with or spoon.
Right.
This is, I just...
However, that figure doesn't include the 10,000 people that Brits are cosplaying.
Now,
cosplaying. Now, we've discussed this before, because this is a new concept for me. This is, you put on a costume, and you pretend you're something that you're not. It's like Halloween, but it's adults doing it, and they pretend that they're people from books or movies, or in this case, dogs.
You know, sometimes it doesn't bother me. I'm going to the Walker Stalker Con, the Walking Dead convention this weekend.
Yeah.
And I see people dressed as Rick Grimes and Quirrell. And it, you know what? It's endearing and cute to me. For some reason, when you go completely overboard.
Right.
It's, I don't know.
But I'm not saying one is... makes more sense than the other, but when these people do it, they're doing it at a convention where there's other people and they're walking around going, yeah, you really look like that guy. You did a nice job with your costume.
Right.
These guys, the guys who are quote-unquote human pups, they're doing it in the privacy of their own home.
And getting their freak on.
Yeah. So I think that's, I think that's weirder. Don't you think that's just a little bit weirder?
But the costumes are fantastic.
I guess.
This is... If you were to be a human and try and look like a dog, this is the best time I've ever seen it.
Yeah. Is it?
You know, I just... Maybe I'm a prude. I'm sorry.
According to Channel 4, that's
it's
the...
It's rubber. It's a rubber suit.
Yeah, it's a rubber suit. According to Channel 4, that's the people doing this documentary, these grown men covet doggy treats, belly rubs, and squeaky toys. The idea for Human Pups, which airs Wednesday, that's tonight, at 10 p.m., came to director Guy Simmons after he stumbled across some pictures of human dogs on the internet, he told Newsweek. I've never seen anything like it before. On the surface, you'd think it was a few people dressing up as dogs behind closed doors, but the more we researched it, the more surprised I was to learn how large the community was in the UK. They've got their own social networking sites, events, and competitions.
They have a mechanical tail, Bill, that wags.
Yeah. Is that the part you think is weird?
One of these.
Is it?
I mean, there's a trailer. Can we put the trailer up on our Facebook page?
Yeah, but it's...
Put a warning up, please.
Put all kinds of warnings up.
No dogs allowed.
They think... I mentioned this. They think there's in upwards of 10,000 people across Great Britain doing this, dressing up like dogs, humans who want to pretend that they're dogs. What motivates this hidden society to dress up as dogs? Simmons says he came across a broad church of people from all walks of life who turned to puppy play for different reasons. We've come across librarians, security guards, even CEOs of huge corporations. That one I can see. The others I don't.
The librarians, I get it, because they dress up as Old Yeller, because it was a classic book.
Right, there's that. And it says here that they want to remain anonymous, which is the only part of this that makes sense to me so far.
Although, if that was Jimmy Mack in one of those outfits or you,
yeah,
I would recognize you.
Right.
It doesn't, some of them completely cover the face. Some of them just have a long rubber tongue.
Right.
But you can see the eyes.
I know.
The eyes is the window to
the world, to the doggy world. They are gay, they are straight, they are transsexual, they are asexual, but they're all pups, Wendy, it says here. In the documentary, one pup viewer, viewers meet a man named Chip. He's 42 years old. Life is getting, here's how Chip justifies his need to pretend that he's a dog. Life is getting more hectic nowadays.
Agreed.
So far, we're on Chip's side. There's so much pressure on work and life.
Totally agree.
I'm on his side again. Some people drink.
I do. Wendy, I mean, does. I agree.
There are drugs.
I don't really do drugs anymore.
You've got to be civilized in our society. So far, Chip seems to be on the same page.
A genius.
When you're in puppy mode, here's where he loses me, all that goes away. We don't care about money. Dogs don't have money. Because as Jerry Seinfeld points out, no pockets. They don't have pockets. We don't care about what job you've got or a bigger car.
Well, because they can't drive. Dogs can't drive, Bill.
Well, also, no matter what size car, these people, they don't want to drive the car. They just want to stick their heads out the window.
And it's hard to do when you're driving.
Right.
You got to get a pup buddy to
you
drive
need a
for
pup buddy.
Oh, that's what they call each other, I'm sure. Hey, are you...
Want to be my pup buddy? Yeah.
Can woof, I help woof. Your leg?
Yeah. That you meant that as part of the story, right? Puppy play is a form of escape from the pressures of everyday life.
So is working out.
Right.
So is dancing.
Right. There's other
so
options.
So is taking your dog for a walk.
There's so many other options. This is also the case of Tom, who is 32 years old. He is a sound and lighting technician.
I'd be was.
No, it says is, but wouldn't you be leery? Like if somebody was up for a job with you and then they casually mentioned, like you go, you know, could you come in Thursday around 4? And they go, oh, I could. But that's when I like to dress like a dog and pretend I'm a dog. Wouldn't you go, hmm.
That's why no one's going to say that.
Right, I know. He was named, Tom, the 32-year-old sound and lighting engineer. This is a nice accolade. He was named Mr. Puppy UK in 2015. Where do you put that trophy?
You're
in just,
your dog
in
house.
The guy's office. Oh, what's this? You were Mr. Puppy of 2015?
I think you bury it in the backyard, don't you?
I want to know if Shania Twain's ex-husband, Mutt Lang, is one of the puppy pals.
It's a good question. It's a competition, it says. The Mr. Puppy UK competition is a competition to see how human puppies show off their talents. Tom was dressed as a human dog for 10 years.
Are you listening to yourself reading these words? Because it's really, if you've just tuned in, listeners, this is real, unfortunately.
This is disturbing, but it's real. Tom was dressed as a human dog for 10 years. I'm hoping not consecutively. I'm hoping at some point he didn't. Kevin? No? You don't want Kevin editing himself.
I know. That was that, really
you
great.
You know this is bad because Kevin was ready and said, I can't.
How does it say how much these suits cost? It's like a full
body suit.
It says here that
it was made out of rubber.
It's rubber? Oh, okay.
Custom made.
How expensive before it's a deal breaker for you, Kevin?
Is Sam Shepard in
this?
I got
a wedding to pay for this year.
It says it was custom made, but I think we could have guessed that. Which clothing store could you possibly go to where you go?
Dogs are
Where are your doggy outfits, please? I want to be the new Mr. Puppy UK.
You don't have a dog, but I'm sure you still know this. Male dogs sleep and lick parts of their body. That's really all they do.
That's pretty much the day, right? Yeah. So you think that was the competition?
Well, I want to know.
Tom, you scored extremely well in the sleeping competition, but now comes the more challenging part of today's show.
Let's see how limber you are.
You'll like this part. He even sleeps in a dog cage, just like a real dog.
Somebody lock him in there.
He lives with a handler, and that part's in quotes. This whole story should be in quotes. He lives with a handler. A handler, it says here, is a human who takes responsibility for their pets.
Yeah,
in this
I know
case,
what a handler is.
Well, it says that they're explaining to people. Like, this would be the part you'd be reading the story going, I understand this part and this part, but a handler, help me with this. It's a human who takes responsibility for their pet. In this case, a friend of his named Colin. I do theater work. I hide in the dark. I do sound and I do light, says Tom. I don't want to be seen at work, and I don't want to be seen in the public eye, but in my pup life, I want to be the center of attention.
Obviously.
I can see that, I guess. Can we take a break?
And go home?
And reevaluate everything we know to be true in the world, and then come back and
yes.
discuss this further?
Can't wait to hear more.
All right. Are you a human pup? Give
no,
us a
I'm
call.
Not. Oh, I thought you were asking me.
Bark once if you are a human pup. Bark twice if you are not. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
And they called it puppy love.
I would like somebody to dress up as a young Donny Osmond, and then I would be into it.
I get that. I understand that. Can I ask, this is the most naive question I will ask this month. I know May still has about a week to go, but this will be my most naive question for the month of May. Is this a sexual thing for these people to dress up like dogs and pretend they're dogs?
You really don't know the answer.
I swear to you, I don't. I can't.
Let me ask you
so
this question to answer
to
your question.
All right.
How do these puppy pals or puppy players like their sex?
I don't know. Oh.
Rough.
I do know. It occurred to me. As
you
I saw
so
you,
innocent.
I saw you reaching for your Dixie Riddle cups, and I'm like, I know what's going on now.
Oh, we got, what are they called, puppy pals?
Yeah, human pups.
Human pups? You're one of them, Brad? I don't believe you.
Yeah, I am.
You are? All right, so when did this start?
What breed are you?
That's personal. You
I
don't have to
know.
Answer that,
yes,
Brad.
Yes, you do.
You don't have to answer that.
Yeah, well, there's really no breed to it. It's more of a form of escapism. Generally, gay guys under 30 prefer to. You're going to see a lot this week.
Why is there a puppy pal convention?
No, IML.
What is that?
International Mr. Leather.
Oh, all right.
Are you wearing leather right now, Brad?
No, I'm at work right now.
Are you saying the two are connected?
Well, yeah.
Is there a connection? I wouldn't have put that together either.
International leather.
But putting leather on is so different from dressing up and pretending you're a dog.
Yeah.
That's way different.
Well, in a way, yes, and in a way, no. For the younger males, it's kind of an escapism.
Yeah.
And they like to be controlled. I mean, I can only say so much.
Yeah, I know.
Sure.
So, Brad, to answer Bill's question, is this a sexual thing?
Yeah.
Great question, by the way.
Right.
It is.
For some it is, for some it isn't.
Well, for the ones who it isn't, I'm trying to think of what the motivation would be if it isn't. Why would they do
it? Listen, a dog's life is not bad. You get somebody petting you, taking you for a walk, giving you treats, loving you more than they love their kids.
Oh,
oops,
maybe.
Not me.
Oh.
Yeah, well.
But you know what I mean? Being a dog is not so bad.
Right.
True.
What happens if you dress like a dog and a guy comes by dressed like a cat? What happens then?
Well, I can't say that I've ever seen a guy dressed as a cat.
A woman dressed as a cat. There would be a scuffle.
You know, you may be onto something there, because there is no cat or kitty scene.
There isn't.
Maybe you should start that.
Are you 100% confident in that?
Right. We don't know. Maybe there is.
He's cracking himself up.
Well, I guess there could be.
I'm glad you called in, because to me, this is just kind of funky, but I don't get it, but I need to learn more about it, because I think...
Well, there's humor in everything, but
sure.
Yeah.
So you're saying right around 30 years old?
That's the average.
Most of them that I know are 30 and younger.
Is that in dog years?
Yeah.
Of course, you know, it is.
He laughs like that exit stage left dog.
Right. Right. Snagglepuss?
Snagglepuss.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, God. Or Motley. Are you thinking
Motley? That's one of them.
All right. So yeah, the International Man of Leather, what is it again? I don't go to it, but
International Mr. Leather. It's been there in Chicago
for years.
27 years now.
I mean, we lose a lot of conventions, but not that one.
Yeah.
Right now, and that's going on this weekend?
Yeah, it's at the Congress Hotel, and then at the park across the street.
Now, if I were to go...
Wait a minute, at the park, do people walk each other to the park?
No,
well, this
that
is
would
the
be
international...
crazy.
They do, yeah. Oh, they will. You'll see guys walking their quote-unquote puppies.
Really?
How about that?
I have to go look at this.
Wow.
Oh, yeah, you can go in. It's open to the public.
Do you guys give each other
you'll
treats?
You'll not be shocked.
Food treats,
that's,
I guess I should
personal.
Say.
Well, there are some that give treats, yeah.
Well, this is a fascinating part of life. Now, I wonder if we should put this listener on with you. Do you feel like fielding someone who doesn't understand? Can
Put
I
your
just
seatbelt
say,
on, Brad.
People who don't understand seem to criticize. Would you agree
but
with
I,
that,
but
Brad?
But you and I were two of them moments ago. This is so foreign to us.
It's still a little freaky for me, but you know what?
I understand.
And what floats your boat. But, Brad, we'd like you to meet Colleen. Colleen, this is Brad.
Hey. Hi, Brad. Hey.
Hey.
This is like Facebook, but on the radio.
Right.
You get to comment, Colleen, but you have to talk to him face to face or ear to ear.
I don't understand. I don't understand this. I have dogs. I love dogs. My daughter's a dog groomer, but I don't understand the whole people dog thing. It's disturbing to me.
It's disturbing to you. I don't get it either.
I mean, I don't understand the adult baby thing, but people do it.
Infantilism. I saw it on Phil Donahue once. It's still. I saw it 28 years ago. I still go, like, what?
I can't get past the people do jigsaw puzzles.
That's crazy, too. You're right, Steve.
Those are hard. Yeah.
So, Colleen, it's like, you know, whatever floats your boat, because what I find amusing is Brad is into the puppy stuff but does not like the baby stuff. But we all have our preferences, right?
Whatever wags your tail, Wendy.
I guess. I know a lot of 30-year-old men, gay and not gay, and I'm not against any of that, but the whole, I don't know, I don't, just dressing up as a dog.
Oh, these costumes are pretty ornate.
They're elaborate.
And, yeah, they are.
I mean, you can search on Facebook, just put like puppy or puppy group. And you'll come across a group of them.
It's all right there. Well, Colleen, we appreciate your opinion. Okay. And Brad, you got to get your distemper shot before the end of the month. Don't forget.
Yeah, I know. It's due. Adding rabies.
I know. All right. Well, be careful out there.
All right. Thank
you. All right. Thanks, guys.
Thanks, guys.
Bye-bye.
Appreciate it.
See, now that went better than anticipated, and here's why.
Yeah.
Because if we would have let Brad go, Colleen would have gotten on and said something like, this is crazy and outrageous. But see how she toned it down a little bit?
That's
true. We have to respect one another.
So true. So true. All right, we'll take a quick break. Steve has the news and then a lot more show. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Bill Dane Neal is here of the Dane Neal Show.
That's where I know him from.
And congratulations, you have a sponsor for your segment. We'd like to welcome Resurrection University.
Oh, that's...
You're lucky.
No, it's exciting. And so we're going to have, when we're in, we're going to have some reads with some tips that are going on out there in the world of health and medical advancement, especially on the education side. Yeah, I'm a proponent mm-hmm. of education,
you like education,
especially when it's not
you?
Mine. But yeah. I want my medical professionals
sure,
educated.
Sure, of course.
And then occasionally we'll have one of them in studio to kind of give a tip. How to stay cool in the summer, how to avoid things like Zika virus, all
Good.
Sorts of important things.
Yeah, we do need to know all that stuff.
Also in studio with you, Dane, is one of the Banos brothers, Jimmy Banos, who is no stranger to these airwaves, a weekly guest with Bob and Marianne for a long, long time. Hi, Jimmy. How are you?
Good.
Nice
how
to
you
see
doing?
You. You look fantastic.
You know what? I'm on the downstream. I've gained and lost 2,000 pounds my whole life. And right now, I'm down about 55.
But doing it within your life is the way to do it. Don't do it like in a month or something.
No,
that'd
no,
be
you
crazy.
You'll gain it. I'll gain triple back.
Sure.
That sounds like a really effective kind of infomercial. We've made it easy. Like, stop yo-yoing. Just do it over the course
exactly.
of your lifespan.
Well, perfect. It's hard, Jimmy, because you're such a great cook. And as you're cooking, don't you taste?
Yeah, I appreciate that. But you know what? It's not even that. It's at when I go at home when I get home. And then
really?
Nothing's safe.
Because you're busy when you're at work.
Yeah, it's just like nothing's safe. My wife will go, you know, you were just at a restaurant for 16 hours, didn't you? It's like, it's not that. It's just like you come home and
But it's your
whatever.
Restaurant. You don't want to eat the profits.
No,
wait
no,
till
I
you
don't
get home.
Right.
Don't get high on your own supply.
Right.
But Jimmy, what happens when you've been in a restaurant setting all day, you've been cooking all day and all night, and then you go home? I would think the last thing you'd want to do is cook, is it?
It's not cooking. It's like Triscuits and Merk cheddar cheese.
Oh.
And then pickled jalapenos. That's a perfect.
Maybe Gino's pizza rolls.
Yeah. Maybe.
Yeah, and whatever's left over, I'll eat that. But usually it's just like, you know, Rick Bayless salsa, the little jar thing.
Yes.
We have. It's fantastic. And then chips, and I'll make nachos or, you know, it's like, you know, at 1 o'clock.
How
in the
long do you do
so.
This? Just all night? Like little.
No, quick.
Oh.
Quick.
A combination of all those things.
I just hit and run, you know.
Well, don't forget, Wendy, he has a staff, so there's somebody like at his house ready to fill that.
Sure. No, I do not have a staff. Sure. I have two dog Cocker Spaniels looking at me like, please, something drop.
Well, I thought it would be great to have not only Jimmy, and of course we've known him for years, Hall of Fame chef here, so identified not only with Chicago, but Heaven on 7, one of really the beloved restaurants in Chicago, but also, and we'll have him probably in on the next segment, is Jimmy Banos Jr. Mm-hmm. And, you know, a
chip off the old block, huh?
Yeah, fourth generation. It's nice. Awesome.
An amazingly accomplished chef in his own right. Of course, the guy behind Purple Pig, a James Beard Award winner, to talk not only about, you know, kind of their take on Memorial Day, kind of what things they do, but then also on Father's Day, too. Like, what do the two fathers who have all the food that you could want get for each other on Father's Day?
Very, very good. Yeah. You just said fourth generation. So obviously, if you're doing it, your son's doing it, this infers your parents and grandparents also.
My dad did it on his side, and then his mother, actually. She, in the early 20s, inherited a restaurant from her two brothers that got deported back to Greece.
Wow.
Back to the homeland.
Yeah.
And then so she ran a diner in Logan Square, and then my grandfather on my mom's side had a little diner across the street from Western Electric on Cicero Avenue in Cermak.
So you saw growing up the trials and tribulations of putting a restaurant business together, and people don't realize it's one of the hardest things to accomplish,
right,
business-wise.
And I started working at 9 years old at one of my dad's places on 35th and Western, and I still wanted to be in this restaurant, this crazy-ass business. You know, it's nuts.
Well, you think about it, and Bill, you mentioned it is absolutely true. It is one of the toughest businesses to be in.
24/7, aren't you pretty much?
Yeah, I've got two phones. I have an iPad in my back pocket usually, and it's just like, but you know, I'm like a doctor. I said I'm on call 24/7. If anybody needs anything, please call me, just in case I'm not there. And I've been there more than ever.
And you look at it now, of course, with hindsight, you can look back, and it was absolutely the right move to make. And Jimmy Jr. has got, you know, a huge and successful career ahead of him. But were there times where you didn't want him to be, you know, 9 years old doing what you were doing?
Not nine. I brought him in at 3.
Okay.
I brought both kids in at 3. Wow. Believe it or not. And then just,
what do they do at 3?
You know what? We go to the market first in the morning. They would usually wake me up, and then we'd go to the market and go buy whatever we needed for the day. And then we'd walk in, I'd give them breakfast, him and my daughter. And then I'd have them clean the tables, the stems of the tables, and then all the chairs.
And they did that?
Oh yeah.
Wow.
At 3.
Right. And then I'd bring coloring books or something, let them mess around, let them do that. And then Wendy sifts flour.
Wendy does that for me, Jimmy, here on the show.
But now that's their home away from home then. They get so comfortable there. Right. What a great idea.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, we even had, you know, when we got really crazy busy or whatever, I would clear a shelf of pots and fold up aprons, and Jimmy would fall asleep underneath the table. It was the best. My wife said it was cruelty to minors, but it's like, we're Greek.
No, because look what Jimmy's doing now, though. So that meant that got in his blood. It got him excited.
And, you know, when it was time to go look for colleges, he goes, well, I'm going to chef school. And I looked at him and said, really? He goes, yeah, you knew that. And I said, yeah, I knew that, but I never, you know, I would never push, because how many times have we seen any parents or successful business or not, or and would, you know, force their children into the business, and then the business a couple years later goes, tanks.
May I say Honey Boo Boo?
That's a perfect example.
Is that a business?
But wait, was that the most scariest thing ever?
Well, I know.
Yeah, it was. But even if you knew that was coming, even though you knew Jimmy was probably going to go to chef school, to just hear him say those words, what was the level of pride for you?
It was great.
Yeah.
It was great. Then we went to go look at schools, and he picked Johnson Wales in Providence, Rhode Island. Because there's eight colleges in that town. There was unbelievable amount of women all walking around. I said, come on, you have to have both. You know, so it was perfect.
Yeah. But now you didn't go to school to do that. You just came
I actually went. I'm a graduate of Washburn Trade School.
Really?
In the city, which is the oldest culinary school in the country.
That's what I mean. I didn't know there were culinary schools.
Yeah.
Well, I'm this not was saying a trade school.
So it was I was 58 yesterday. Was my birthday.
Congratulations.
Oh. Happy birthday. Yeah,
that's great.
Bill would have made you a cake had we known.
Yeah. Right. Right.
We talked about it being a tough business to be in, and you have been blessed not only to have you know, some great and very successful restaurants, as like Chicago's been blessed to have you. Were you surprised as, you know, with Purple Pig and the things that you've done, you probably couldn't even have hoped initially that he would have the success you'd hope for it, I guess, but you couldn't guarantee it. But that's surpassed so many things.
Right. I knew his drive he's relentless, you know, and I know his passion is just unbelievable, which you have to have. You have to have this in this business. Otherwise it'll eat you up. It'll kill you. And, I knew he would do anything to possibly to succeed. You know what I'm saying? And his just research and constant research. And he'll try something, you know, he'll put something on the menu and all of a sudden three of them go out and he'll pull it off the menu that for that night. And so, you know, what's wrong? He goes, I got to work on it. Something's not, it's not right. All of a sudden I'll see, he'll make a couple changes. Then the next day I'll try it. He goes, and I thought it was fantastic. Then all of a sudden the next day it was like, oh my God, it's even, you know, 10 times better than what it was.
So would you say this is or is not the right business to get into if you're a perfectionist?
I think it's a great business. Yeah. I think you have to be. You have to. You can't. I mean, when you own multiples, and I found that out, if you set the knife and fork, you know, straight, and, you know, and if it's turned just a little bit, then you have to be okay with it. But you know what? As I've seen, because I've had some restaurants that I've closed and things like that, you have to be relentless. Otherwise, forget it.
I would imagine. So. All right, Jimmy Banos is here. Dane Neal is here. We're talking food. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200, we'll get that done. It's Bill F. and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Dane Neal is here. Jimmy Banos Sr. was here and still is here. He's been joined by Jimmy Banos Jr. And we'll add a Banos every day till someone wins them all. Jimmy, your dad was in the business, your grandparents in the business, your great-grandparents in the business.
Yes.
So you saw all this from the time, as your dad just pointed out, you were 3 years old.
Diapers. He used to bring, I was in my diapers when he brought me to the restaurant. Yeah, at a very, very young age.
Three, he said, and you used to lay your little head on the apron.
Yeah, I used to, at all my spots, I would work for a little bit. I'd do like bus tables, and I would crawl on my hands and knees and like wipe. He'd make me wipe all the stems of the tables.
I can't believe you did it.
Yeah, I enjoyed it. It was good.
That is a kid thing.
Yeah,
though.
I really did enjoy it. And then I would eat some breakfast, and then I usually would like when lunch rush was starting to get crazy. A lot of times I remember I'd like nap under the prep table, like literally like the prep table. I'd like sleep under the prep table, sleep on the top of a chest freezer. I'd be all, I mean, so then I would work. I'd help my dad and my grandfather, usually by sitting on, remember I used to sit on a bucket of fryer oil.
That seems safe. But,
yeah.
It wasn't hot.
But you know, it was good. So then as I got older every year, I would be able to do more and more and get involved more and, you know, do more things, and then it just kind of continued to grow from there.
It's one thing to participate. It's one thing to be, you know, in the industry and be good at it. And Jimmy had said, as surprising as it may have been, that he was pleasantly surprised that you were going to make this, you know, career the one that you were going to do, like work in food. But,
right.
But at what point, Jimmy, did you know that he was going to be special? I think special, 3 years old doing the table stems is one thing. But at 7 years old, was he suggesting like improvements in the POS system?
I knew at eight. I brought him an event and he was cutting with a French knife. And my wife says, "Are you kidding me? He's going to cut his finger." I said, "Well, he's got more.
I still clearly remember that. Mom was like, "What are you doing? What are you doing right now with this kid?"
It was moms freak out because we're worried about what could happen.
Exactly.
Dads are more realistic in general. I'm generalizing by saying, don't get them freaked out about it. Just let them do it.
Right.
If it happens, we'll deal with it.
Exactly.
That's so funny.
Well, it's so much about Mother's Day, and of course, Father's Day is kind of based around food. It's the way people celebrate. And a lot of listeners wanted to know, like, what do you guys do? Because you're providing so many people with fun food-based experiences. But what do you guys do or want to do like on Father's Day?
Yeah, it's usually my holiday. Yeah, like Mother's Day, we did steaks. You know, did
Are you trapped at the grill all day?
No, I do. That's why my wife, you know, you're not enjoying yourself. I said, I am enjoying myself. I like cooking for everybody. And then yesterday was my birthday, but I got Popeye's chicken. You know?
It's like, any red beans and rice?
It's just like Popeye's chicken and mayonnaise and then a macaroni salad from Jewel. You know, it was a beautiful thing.
I think I got the $8 bucket.
Jimmy, then, when they sing happy birthday to you at Popeye's, is it a special feeling?
Exactly.
It must be.
But Memorial Day, we'll do. Actually, we're going to go by, from last I heard, we're going to go by his mother-in-law's house, and she's going to make, she makes homemade dolmades, you know, Greek stuff.
Stuffed grape leaves.
Like, which reminds me of my mom. So,
she's the best Greek home cook there is, period. Yeah. Like, yeah, there's no, awesome. I mean, like, there, she's unbelievable.
Yeah.
I mean, I've stole all her recipes. They tell me, like, my wife's like, are you good? It's like, look at you trying to steal my mom's ideas and use them at the pig. She's like, you should be paying her. I'm like, all right. No,
I recently, my sister-in-law married a Greek guy, Jimmy Katsifaros. He's awesome. Mm-hmm. And at their wedding, I had the Greek lemon chicken soup that I've never had before.
Avgolemono soup.
Yes.
Yeah.
It is the best ever.
So it's addictive.
It's so easy to make, too.
Do you have a recipe for that? I might hit you up for it. Yeah. All right.
Will you do the thing? You leave a key ingredient out.
No,
so it
never.
Taste just as good.
No, never. No. You know, I wrote 2 cookbooks. So if you do that, people will come, and especially they're very vocal at the restaurant.
They'll hunt you down.
Yeah. Like, this didn't work. This is not good. And it's like, okay, I'm sorry.
How do you go from Greek to Cajun? How do you make that transition?
You know, I like a little bit of assertive food, and I think I fell in love with the South, and that's what happened. You know, Paul Prudhomme was a mentor. Yeah.
Boy, it's not just Cajun either. I've been in New Orleans several times. Your food holds up against the best of the restaurants in New Orleans every time.
Thank you.
It really does.
We just celebrated 36 years. I can't believe it.
Awesome.
That's fantastic. That's at the original location.
Original. Yeah, I mean, the one on Rush, I closed a year and a half ago.
Yeah.
That made 18 years. I'm happy.
That's not bad.
We wanted to get a little insight into, now we've seen kind of what you do at home, but what is going on at the restaurants? Of course, having around for so many years, and Purple Pig is just, you know, completely doing gangbusters.
Yeah, we're on 7 years. It'll be 7 years in December.
Wow.
Yeah. I mean, it's like a flash. Boom. You know, it's crazy.
NRA was just in town, not the Cold Dead Hand, Charlton Heston version, but the other one.
NRA should like, what the hell are you talking about?
Well, National Restaurant Association. And it was the talk, as we were working around, so many people talking about, like, they were going to the Purple Pig. So from a people-watching standpoint, did you have any, you know, who stopped? I know people on the celebrity side stopped by, but anybody recently?
More this weekend. Not many celebrity chefs were in town. Really, I mean, a little bit, but I mean, the May for us overall is just insanity because you have the beard awards, and then you have the draft, and then goes to now NRA show, and then there's a candy show this week, and then there's
International
Memorial Day.
Man of Leather is in town.
Yeah, the leather show.
We do at Heaven on 7. We have a very big clientele.
It's all coming at once. So
yeah.
It's, you know,
leather and gumbo go very well.
Can I let them dance on the tables too? If you anything wants, that's no problem.
It's fine.
Yeah. So it's been, it's just wild. So we've got a lot of James Beard and celebrity chefs come in, the past month, but this weekend, literally we were doing upwards to like 1,000 people a day.
That's tremendous.
Yeah. We have 100.
It's not a giant space.
No, with the patio, there's 120 seats.
Yeah.
I mean, I always say this all the time, and my staff is like the hardest working people in this city. It's what being able to produce the quality and high caliber, you know, food and service that they do on a daily basis for that many people. We're 5,000 people a week easily.
On electric too.
Bonkers, crazy,
tremendous.
Your dad has been a star in the food space and in this town for a long time.
He's blushing.
Jimmy Banos.
But Jimmy Jr., I mean, and we talked about celebrities coming in, and of course, you know, that's a destination for people when they visit town, is the Purple Pig. Are you surprised when those people come in to meet you?
It's, you know, growing up in the business and, you know, a lot of the chefs that I've grown up watching, you know, Rick Bayless and Emeril, guys from Mario Batali and Joe Bastianich, all these people that I'm like, oh my, you know, when I was a kid and coming up. Oh my God, we worship them. And then they're coming to eat by me.
Right.
It took a while for me to like not be like, oh
to
my
stop
God.
Pinching stop. Yourself.
Yeah. I mean, that doesn't end. I still pinch myself every day. I walk in that restaurant because it's truly a really magical restaurant. You can't really beat the vibe and the energy that happens. You walk in there, but when they're coming to eat by you, you're just like, you can't. It's the best feeling that I could ever possibly have as a chef. You know,
a ton of time, but I got to know the first thing you taught your son Jimmy Jr. how to cook. Do you remember?
No.
Do you even remember what it was? Was it an omelet? Was it something?
Yeah, eggs. What was that? Because I
how to flip eggs.
How to
with the pan without the spatula? Will you teach us?
You do. All you do is get a piece of bread, and put a piece of bread in a you know, egg pan.
Yeah.
And then just lightly just flip it with your and just
and just get practice. The motion get down. The motion that's down. What you do it with.
It's perfect.
Yeah. All right. Jimmy, if you want to visit Jimmy's restaurant, Jimmy's Senior's restaurant, that'll be Heaven on Seven. So, or Seven on Heaven would also
trust
be a great
me,
restaurant.
Say
think
too.
About that. Heaven on Seven is the way you want to go.
That's the leather
purple
show.
Pig. That's what it is. Mm-hmm. The Purple Pig, so delicious. That's Jimmy Jr.'s restaurant. And thank Dane you. Neal's show, The Dane Neal Show, can be heard on WGN Plus anytime you want. Thanks, guys.
Thanks great for having us.
Really appreciate
great
it. Great to have
Happy
you.
Happy Father's
Thanks.
Day.
A thank quick you. Break, then Kim Gordon with the news. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Well, for a long time, there was a guy here at WGN named David St. Augustine who did a bang-up job.
John St. Augustine.
David St. Augustine.
I'm sorry.
It must have been so long you can't remember
I'm
my
combining
name.
John
St. David.
Names. All I know
I like
is if you have
better,
the name
actually.
Saint in your name, they're going to give you a radio show eventually.
Absolutely. So, Catholic Channel.
John St. Augustine.
Me and Frank.
A long time...
I'm sorry.
Bill, you're funny.
I'm hijacking the show.
A long time host here on WGN.
You make him nervous. That's
I, do. I get a little intimidated around you.
Oh, that's all right.
Along with David Hirsch, or John Hirsch, as some people call him, have put together a book called 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. David and John, thanks for being here, guys. I couldn't help but notice, David, by the way, your name way, way bigger than John's on the cover of this book. Good move. Very smart move.
Yeah, but you know, the funny thing about that is that he rode 2,300 miles plus from Santa Monica to Chicago, and he's going to do it from Boston to Chicago in just a couple weeks. And he deserves to have a bigger name because I ain't getting on a bike. It's not going to happen. I'm not built for speed.
Talk about the genesis of this book. How did this book come about?
So the backstory is that 19 years ago when we had our fifth child, I was looking for fatherhood.
You had five kids?
Five.
Wow.
And I was looking for fatherhood resources, but couldn't find what I was looking for. Stumbled across the fact that there's 24 million kids growing up without their fathers.
Yeah.
And thought somebody should do something about it. So that led to creating a not-for-profit here in Chicago called the Illinois Fatherhood Initiative.
And they're growing up without their fathers for a multitude of reasons, correct?
Right. You know, divorce is a pretty obvious one, but most people are alarmed to learn that a third of the kids born in Illinois don't even have a dad's name on the birth certificate.
And a third.
Wow.
That's an incredible
doesn't
number.
Make headlines.
Yeah.
So as a numbers person, there are about 180,000 live births annually here in Illinois. A third is about 60,000 who might not know who their biological dad is.
I was just telling you off the air, my dad died when I was 10. A family friend got together and had a graduation party for us in eighth grade. 10 girls, we all hung out. I was the only one who had one parent. Everybody else had a mom and a dad, and no divorce, no death. And out of 10 girls, only one kid didn't have a dad, and it was me. That's way different now.
Oh, yeah. 4 out of 10 kids grow up without their dads these days.
So what do we know? I throw this question out to both of you. What do we know about a child who will go through their formative years without a father?
What's wrong with me, in other words?
What's wrong
tell
with
me.
Well, yeah, I think you found the right vocation.
Getting attention.
There you go.
Well, the biggest one, at least for me, is that there's 3,200 kids that drop out of high school every day across America. So that's going to lead to drug and alcohol abuse. It's going to lead to crime and incarceration. It's going to lead to higher levels of suicide and teen pregnancy.
Because that's all, in my personal opinion, involves around low self-esteem. Because you're bailing on something that you really know you shouldn't, but you do, and it seems like it's a spiral after that.
Yeah, well, a lot of unresolved issues.
Yep.
Some kids are more resilient than others. Some kids have amazing moms. My mom was an amazing mom. She raised me and my brother as a Chicago public school teacher.
Yeah.
If you don't mind sharing about how the book kind of starts a little bit, that you had a challenging relationship with your father growing up. And one of the things that the first things that we talked about at lunch that day, and I kind of, you know, I tend to speak my mind, Wendy.
Yes, you do.
Oh. Bill, great legs. I'm not kidding.
You're very
man's
kind.
Wearing shorts today.
The shorts are out.
They are
it's
out.
It's Bill left season.
Last
that's
time
what
I saw legs
summer.
Like that, I said they were on a piano. But that's a whole other show.
Wow.
But listen, at the very first lunch we had, he was telling me about his life, and I leaned over and I said, so this challenging relationship with your father gave you a great gift. And he's like, what? Because to me, the genesis of everything is how you perceive it. And he wouldn't be doing the work he's doing had that been different. So all those kids, even though that there are challenges with growing up without a dad, there's a gift in there, but you have to go find it. It's not going to be handed to you. And I think that, for me, was the big deal with writing this book, is chapter after chapter is about finding that stuff because it's buried. It's so easy to judge. It's a lot harder to think. And we're asking people, I think, in this book, and I know when you start digging into it, is to think about the role of fatherhood, who you are as a dad. It's not the old days, You know, do as I say, not as I do. Those days are gone, you know.
Totally.
Yeah, so this is a whole, the 21st century dad concept is about actually being participating. What a concept. And it doesn't mean being a helicopter pilot and signing your kid up for every program known to man because he ain't going to play Major League anything. It's about becoming a Major League father. That's where the magic's at.
It's the hardest job ever, being a mom. I have two boys, and it really is hard. And with my mom losing her husband, I didn't realize how hard she worked and how great she was until I had kids of my own. And then I realized I was not that easy to take care of. But she served as both a mom and a dad to me. And these moms should get accolades, too.
No question. No question about that.
I have a lot of esteem for single moms, like
I said
earlier.
It's so hard.
But let's not gloss over the fact that the moms can't do both roles, right? They can do everything they can. They can be providers.
Right.
They can be nurturers. But I think the most important thing for single moms to do is give some thought to, who can I surround my kids with? Who are those adult male role models?
Like an uncle or a grandparent?
Well, look, there's a difference. When mom says knock it off and dad goes, knock it off.
Yeah.
There's a difference.
Yeah.
And there's a different energy there. And there's a presence there. I call it the rudder to some degree, Dave and I have talked about. We all have rudders. And our formative years determine to a great amount how that rudder steers our lives. So we're all worried about what's going on at the surface and how it looks. But the bottom line is it's underneath. And you have that father figure or someone who's in your life like your grandfather was for you. Mm-hmm. It's the counterweight to so much of this negativity. And that's what the book talks about. I mean, it's the ability to write a book in 2.5 months and get ready for this Father's Day is unheard of. I think that there's a great message in that for fathers this year to have it. You give mom, you go out and buy your dad a tie or some goofy thing, that's great. But you give a guy a book and he can relate to those things in there, it can literally transform it because the information can lead to transformation. That's what the whole concept, I think, of being a 21st century dad's about.
So how does this translate? We said somebody else, hopefully at least one other person, has to step up. If there's a missing father, you're hoping that an uncle or a grandfather or somebody close by steps up. But just because of the way time is divvied up in society now, that's not easy for an uncle or a grandfather or somebody else close by. So how does that play out time-wise?
That's a great question. So it's not one size fits all.
Yeah.
Right? It's all circumstantial. And I think if each of us as adults understand what the issue is and the consequences, hopefully there's a call to action. And the call to action is that, you know, women have a role, men who are fathers have a role, and those who maybe are grandfathers, right, they've been around the track a couple times, can leverage their knowledge and understanding to help out kids. It could be mentoring. It just could be spending more time with kids in your neighborhood, right?
Someone wants to throw this in, and we should, and I feel guilty for not. 815 says, don't forget to mention how hard it is for a single father. I became a single dad, a widower at 37. My children were 7 and 11. I raised them both by myself my entire life.
There's a story in the book. There's a whole chapter written about Father's Day, how it started, and it came out of the loss. Two women lost their dads, and they both went and said there should be something to honor. And this was in the late 1800s, early 1900s, and they both went to the churches that they were involved in and said, would you please do something? And they did a sermon based on loss of a father. But it wasn't until years later that one of the women put it together that her dad was a Civil War survivor and raised 6 kids. You think it's tough now?
Yeah.
I mean, come on. You know, the average life expectancy was 48.
Yep.
So you look at those different things and you say, yeah, that has to be thrown to. But the genesis of Father's Day started with the loss of dads.
The book is called 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. We'll talk more about the book and about you taking incredibly long bike rides. I don't know how you do this. David A. Hirsch and John St. Augustine, both in studio. If you'd like to jump in, 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. The book is called 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. The numbers are staggering. David A. Hirsch and John St. Augustine wrote this book together. Here's a quick quote from Mike Singletary, formerly a Chicago Bear. Growing up without a father in the home after age 12, it has been a lifelong passion of mine to help facilitate healthy, thriving families. David Hirsch shares the same passion and has devoted the last 20 years to recognizing and applauding men of character who have chosen to lead by example and be the pillars of their homes and communities. Nice words from one of Chicago's best.
Yeah, Mike was there at the very beginning when we first launched the Illinois Fatherhood Initiative. I give him a lot of credit for drawing the 120 people, community leaders that showed up.
Yeah.
They certainly weren't coming to hear me speak.
So your foundation, 21st Century Dads Foundation, what do you have coming up, an event?
So we're doing another bike ride, cross-country bike ride, Last year it was Santa Monica to Chicago, 2,300 miles in 21 days.
Slacker.
Yeah. I am, right? Totally.
No, him.
Oh. In 21 days.
Yeah. So most people were betting against me at 54.
Yeah.
Yeah, not being an athlete to be able to complete something like that. But we had a 21-day schedule. I arrived 19 of those days on schedule. I was only delayed twice, once by lightning, once by fatigue.
Here's a, can I ask a strange
those
tactical...
Those are weak excuses.
Wendy's not accepting those, David. Sorry. There's a lot of the course from Santa Maria to Chicago, you're not allowed to have a bike on a highway. So how do you map that out? It must take even longer.
A little bit. So if you did it MapQuest, it would be about 2,100 miles.
Yeah.
The old Route 66 happens to be 2,448 miles. So I found this guy, Lon Haldeman is his name. He's actually ridden Route 66 25 times.
Oh, man.
He's crossed the country. Wow.
He should do
times.
It 66 times.
Yeah.
Listen
he's
to you.
Get to work.
Right, come on.
So the point is he helped iron out the route and helped us with the whole process.
Yeah.
All right, so the website is 21stcenturydads.org.
Yes, it is.
That's where you can go, and the book is 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. We have a listener, and I have to make this clear, too. 630 says, make it clear there are kids out there without the dads because the mother took the children and moved away, not able to be located. This is not the father's fault. Some women find unsuspecting, trusting men to get them pregnant, then book. Happened to my son. It's
right.
Various
just,
situations
no
out
question,
there.
But to me, the overriding and underlying themes here is what you've guys heard me say for years. It's not, what happens to you is not as relevant as how you respond to it. So you can get stuck in the effects. We're talking about the underlying cause. So how that all happens, a myriad of circumstances, none of them really good. You lose your father at 10. Somebody gets divorced. There's a lot of ways. How you respond to that is what breaks the chain of all that follows after it. And, you know, just real quick, I know that you talked about the website. The book's already up for pre-order. You can buy it already at Amazon.com. So this is the kind of thing when this book is built on solutions. We already know the problem. How it shows up, not as important as the solution that's already there.
And the solutions there, you will find help in this book.
Absolutely.
That's what we all need.
What did you learn more than anything in writing this book, David?
This is a lot harder than it looks.
It is, isn't it?
In fact, I was joking. I think this book and the process we've gone through the last few months might have actually been harder than riding from Santa Monica.
Is that right?
In certain respects, sure.
Yeah, yeah. Did you wear a helmet while writing the book?
While writing the book?
Yeah.
As a matter of fact, I did not. But we are getting ready for the Dads on a Ride 2016. Starts on Memorial Day, Monday, mm-hmm. this coming Monday. And we're going to start in Boston and ride back to Chicago.
Is it too late to mend a relationship between a child and a father? Is it ever too late?
Yeah, I think that the real answer is no, it's never too late. But I think you just have to have realistic expectations, right? It's not going to be the, oh, we're buddies. And
it's not going to become perfect if it right. never was.
You know, you just want to be able to acknowledge, you know, the things that have gone by and then not worry about the past. You can't change the past.
You really right. can't.
I think when right is not as important as happy, usually that's something that comes along through difficult circumstances, and then you get to that point and you go, woulda, coulda, shoulda. Unfortunately, we don't wake up real quick. We like to stay asleep because we think that's a whole lot easier, and we fill our lives majoring in minor things. And when you start majoring in minor things like relationships and that, maybe you wake up, maybe you don't. But the best part about this book that I learned, there are a lot of great people doing a lot of great work that never make the headlines. There's a lot of hope out there.
It's good to know.
That's the most encouraging part of all this. It really is. The book is great. 21st Century Dads, A Father's Journey to Break the Cycle of Father Absence. The authors are David A. Hirsch and John St. Augustine. Guys, congrats on the book. Great to see both of you, and good luck with the bike ride. Boy, that's a long...
If you get a phone call from a guy on the road calling your show, you'll yeah. know who it is.
It's David.
We won't
hey,
answer.
It's David.
Would you take my call?
Yeah, we'll take the call.
Okay.
Absolutely.
Great to meet
Next
you.
Caller. Thanks. We already know what you're up to.
Thank you, guys. A okay, quick break, and then we'll find out what's coming up on the Wintrust Business Lunch. That's moments away. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN.
It's doubleheader day, as per usual. Two shows in one day, all for free.
All for free. It's us. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. Now, normally, we don't start off either show, the first or the second show, with a guest. But there's so many pressing issues from the legal world that we said, let's get Rich Lenkov in. the very beginning of the show. And
from
and
Legal Face-Off?
From Legal Face-Off, the one and the same, that Rich Lankoff. Rich is here now. Hi, Rich. How are you?
Hey, guys. How are you? Thanks for having me.
If you wouldn't mind, you know, the Bill Cosby story has been lingering for a little over a year now. And more interesting twists just recently. What's going on with Bill Cosby?
Yeah, on Tuesday, the judge that was hearing the preliminary evidence in Norristown, PA, in the criminal case against Bill Cosby, ruled that there is enough evidence at least to go forward to trial, which is a big deal. Obviously, his attorneys, Bill Cosby's attorneys, were fighting for months to prevent the case from going forward. So now Bill Cosby, for the first time, will face criminal charges for his alleged sexual assault of this one woman.
This is the most recent of the reported cases. The others, as we've discussed in the past, have gone beyond the statute of limitations.
And this was just on the cusp of that, wasn't it?
Exactly. This is former Temple University employee Andrea Constand, who has brought this, or the state has brought this criminal case on her behalf. She just made it in before the statute of limitations ran. The 50 or so other accusers, unfortunately, all of the crimes against them, all of the alleged crimes against them, the statute has run out. That doesn't mean that they're not pursuing Bill Cosby civilly, as we know they are, but this is the only criminal case that can still be brought against him, at least as far as we know.
Now,
depending the outcome on this, it could really vindicate 50 or so women.
For sure. And, you know, great question, great point. And to what extent will the jury allow those other 50 women's allegations to weigh on their decision in this criminal case? That's a big question. One we look at often when we're talking about celebrity cases. We've covered, you know, Patrick Kane on this show before. We talked about how you can find an impartial jury. That's the biggest question in my mind in impaneling this jury. How are you going to find 12 people who are willing to put aside whatever prejudices they have against Bill Cosby and render a fair trial?
Bill, all right, say you're on the jury. You won't be because you're not in the area, but say you are.
Yeah.
You loved this man.
Yeah.
You respected this man.
Yep.
You're aware of these 50 other women. How could you not, in your own mind, I know you're supposed to be fair and impartial, but that's got to mean something to you. And who are you going to find that hasn't heard about these 50 other women coming forward?
No question. I can't imagine there's anyone in that jurisdiction, or really anyone in this country internationally, who hasn't heard of these accusations. They've been going on for at least 2 years. Again, the question isn't whether you can find a jury that is unaware of these accusations. The question is whether you can find a jury that has heard of them, but that is willing to put aside any preconceived biases, decisions that they've made in their mind to render a decision, a verdict, based solely on the evidence in this case, which admittedly is tough. That's the mystery of a jury.
How do they ask that question tactfully when they're screening a potential juror? How do they word that?
You know, you come right out and ask it in
plain
English.
It's not tactful, I'm sure.
Yeah, I mean, you know, there's ways to get around it. The first question, you know, that they'll ask is whether you can put aside any notions that you have about guilt or innocence and render a decision based on this evidence. But the real key, and the real key to your question, is when they say yes or when they say no, I mean, hopefully you're going to find people who say yes, you're going to get a jury that they could put that aside. The real test of the attorneys is to go beyond that. And the science of picking a jury is, can you see through someone saying, yes, I could put that aside, when they really can't, when they
right.
really made their decision?
But
and listen, no one's a mind reader. That goes into the skill of picking a jury.
Mm-hmm.
And how can they not be held in contempt of court if they say, yes, I can be fair and impartial, and then when they're discussing it, well, he did this to the 50 other women. I mean, shouldn't they have repercussions for lying?
Well, definitely. I mean, once you get on the jury, it's not like, you know, everything that you said previous to that goes out the window. If there's evidence during jury deliberations that, you know, you lie to get on the jury, then you're going to be, you know, kicked out. That's presuming that someone rats you out. That's presuming that someone tells you. You know, the judge is responsible for the impartiality of the jury, and the judge isn't in there with them, obviously. So the only way that someone would know that someone is lying is if another juror told what was going on. And that doesn't happen, you know, too frequently. So that's sort of the mystery of what goes on in the jury room.
There was a scene or two in the O.J. Simpson made-for-television series.
Was just
People
ask
versus
O.J.
All goes back to O.J.
It does.
It's probably the same question you were going to ask. they were determining behind the scenes the makeup, what they would hope the makeup of the jury would be, and that was racially and sexually and age-wise. They were trying to determine who would be most sympathetic to O.J. Simpson. Will the same thing happen in Bill Cosby's case?
No question. I mean, listen, when you pick a jury, and I've been there many times, you look for a juror that is going to sympathize with your case, either yeah. with the prosecution or with the defense. And the reality of it is that you do look for certain types of people. You do profile. I mean, you're not allowed to. Remember, it's against the law to profile jurors based on race, gender, age, and those kind of things. Does it happen? All the time. You know, prosecutors have their profile of what they want. They're looking for people who are, you know, going to convict, in this case, Bill Cosby. On the other hand, the defense is going to look for people generally who are maybe older. Certainly minorities are going to look for, given that they think that they might be more sympathetic to one of the most prominent African-Americans on earth. You know, they're going to look for people with disabilities. We've all seen, you know, Bill Cosby. We saw him on TV yesterday. He looks like a mess. He looks terrible.
He does look bad.
So if, you know, you're on the jury and you have some sort of physical ailment, the idea is that you're willing to maybe sympathize with him. The reality I found, not that I've, you know, tried 1,000 cases, but I tried many before a jury. The reality is I think that jurors do, for the most part, put aside those notions. It's really hard to profile a juror based on age or gender or race. You know, for the most part, in my experience, the good news is jurors do tend to look at the evidence and, you know, don't base it on these other factors.
I would do that. It would be tough. I know the 50 women that have come forward, but you have to sit there and go, I'm just going to listen to the evidence. I'm just going to base my decision on that. Another thing I learned from the OJ miniseries is that there are alternates because they kept dismissing people right and left. How many alternates are there? And if they run out of alternates, it's a mistrial?
Yeah, usually, you know, it's pretty rare to run out of alternates. In a longer trial like OJ, that can happen. Usually you impanel enough alternates so that that won't happen. I've never had a case where we've had to get to an alternate, so that should give you some perspective. But usually, you know, there's six or so alternates in bigger cases. Ones like the OJ case had that many just because of the chances of people getting off.
Thank God they had that many.
Rich, Bill Cosby has roughly 50 accusers. I know this particular case is just for one particular person,
correct,
obviously. But if you're the prosecutor, aren't you trying somehow to establish some sort of character or lack of character in Bill Cosby and say, I get that this is just one person making the accusation here, but look at the throngs of women that have come forth. How do you do that?
100%. If you're the prosecutor, you want this case not to only be about Andrea Constant. You want it to be about all of these women. You want the jury to feel that the other accusations have some weight, and when there's smoke, there's fire. So, you know, in addition to the evidence that they have against Bill Cosby for this one woman, they want all of this other evidence in. And what you do, how you do that, is you introduce testimony. Now, the defense's job is to keep all of that out, obviously, right? They want to argue that none of that is relevant. None of that shows, first of all, none of that has been adjudicated. That's the most important thing. If I'm the defense attorney, I'm representing Cosby, I'm arguing that these are all accusations,
right?
Why would you let accusations in? Even if they rose to the level of prosecutions, even if they rose to the level of criminal acts, you would even have a good leg to keep those out. But in this case, all you have is accusations. So there's a pretty good chance that those won't get in, that the judge will only allow evidence of this particular case. But the reality is they're going to get in, not through evidence, but through the preconceived notions of the jurors. They're going to get in. But the details probably won't get in because, again, they're only accusations. Nothing's been proven criminally.
When is this trial going to start, and is it going to be televised?
Yeah, the judge said later this summer, so I think we could expect, you know, a jury fairly soon.
Yeah.
I don't know what the laws are with televising trials in this particular in Norristown, but I would imagine that they would.
He's Bill Cosby, for gosh sakes.
But that can't enter into their decision as to whether or not to televise it. It's based more on the state that they would have the trial in, right?
Yeah, well, this is in Norristown, PA. So whatever the rules are there, I don't know what they
There's
are.
There's only a handful of states that allow cameras in the courtroom,
is
right?
Is that true?
Yeah. A lot of states do. I don't know
the exact number,
but yeah, many do.
Come on, that's going to put Pennsylvania on the map.
Supreme Court, obviously, is the biggest, you know, you hear most about TV cameras or trials being televised with the U.S. Supreme Court. That's right. Not being done yet, you know, but that's where people want it.
I know it's early to even make this prediction, but in your eyes, will Bill Cosby ever see the inside of a jail cell for this?
I think he will. I mean, yeah. I think, you know, there seems to be strong evidence just in this case. I mean, again, we all know the accusations that have been leveled against him by the others, but, you know, having analyzed the evidence in this particular case, I think there's enough, and I don't think there's much goodwill out there in the jury pool for Bill Cosby. So I think he will, you know, what will mitigate his time in jail is his age, his condition. That will probably weigh in the judge's sentence, but I think he's going to go to jail.
All right, here's a scenario. Some dude walking to the workout room in prison is going to go, isn't that the Jell-O pudding guy?
That's Bill Cosby.
How weird is that
It's the
thought?
Most unlikely series of events when it comes to a celebrity. You would just never... 5 or 10 years ago, if somebody said, here's what's going to happen, you'd go, well, that can't happen.
Dr. Huxtable in jail.
That can't happen.
Seems impossible.
It doesn't seem right. Rich Linkoff is here. We'll discuss this and other topics next. We're 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. Rich Linkoff is here. Rich, if you wouldn't mind, could you just push your podcast for a little bit?
Push it where?
Just push it over to my side of the table.
Sure. Absolutely.
WGNplus.com, Legal Face Off.
That's what it is.
Oh, push it that way.
That's what I mean. That's
I'm the worst marketer for my own show.
You're
yes.
a lawyer, sir. That's what comes first and foremost.
Legal Face Off on WGN Plus.
That's right. All right. So, Rich, we were discussing the Bill Cosby case, but there's other big cases going on right now. For instance, in Texas, they are suing the President of the United States. It's not the first time, not by a long shot, right? They've tried to sue him 15 or 20 times so far.
Texas is in the lawsuit business when it comes to suing the federal government. The current governor, who's a Republican, is the former attorney general. And when
Greg
he was
Abbott.
Attorney general, he sued, yeah, like you mentioned, he sued them about 20 times. In this case, the attorney general, who's also a Republican, is bringing the lawsuit against the Obama administration to try to prevent this decree that came down a week or so ago, saying that if states didn't allow transgender bathrooms in public universities and other public places, then the federal government would withhold funds from them. So Texas is the first state, among others, we think, that is trying to prevent that federal decree.
They said the state plans, this is time.com, the state plans to file a lawsuit challenging the Obama administration rules that instruct public schools to allow transgender students to use whichever bathroom they like. If you're a man or a teenager, a boy dressed as a girl, and you use the bathroom, how would anybody know unless somebody brought this up? Just go where you fit in and where you feel comfortable and you don't look out of place. I mean, if I'm in the girls' washroom and a guy comes in, I'd be like, dude, wrong room. But right. I wouldn't get all freaked out and think he was going to abuse me. It's a bathroom. We're going to relieve ourselves.
Yeah.
It's not, you know, you're not going there to prey on people. And just because you're a transgender does not make you a rapist or an assaulter or a pedophile. I mean, you're just going to the bathroom.
So true.
Listen, I agree, not, you know, as an objective legal analyst, but from my personal opinion, I couldn't agree with you more. I think the idea that this will lead to predators and, you know, and that kind of thing is ridiculous. And it's been debunked. From a legal perspective, you know, what the Obama administration has argued is that the forcing people who identify themselves as transgenders to use, you know, men's or women's bathrooms violates Title IX. That's really an interesting legal issue because that's never been litigated before, and that will ultimately probably be decided by the Supreme Court, the question of whether Title IX protects transgenders. Until now, it's only been used to protect women and same-sex gender. So we'll
and
see.
That's
but
been
I,
in existence for how long? For years and years and
since
years?
Since the 60s, yeah.
Right.
It's weird. Women couldn't vote for a while, you know? Now we
right.
can. I mean, things change.
Yeah, yeah. So does Texas have a fairly decent track record when suing a president in his administration, or has it just not happened yet?
I mean, they have sued the Obama administration over his over his administration several times. We talked about 15 yeah. or 20 times. I don't know what their track record is. I think that, you know, it's a political issue, first
sure.
and foremost. And I think that the Republican governor, who was, again, the former attorney general, you know, it plays to their base. Yeah. There are other states, Republican states, that have come out in support of this lawsuit, and we think other states will follow suit. Mississippi, for example, has come out against this decree, and they've also threatened a lawsuit.
Rich, thank you. We appreciate it. That's Rich Lankoff.
It'll all be different when Trump is president.
It'll all be different when Trump is president.
In many ways.
It will be. All right. We'll take a quick break. Thanks, Rich.
Thanks, guys.
Steve with the news and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
It's Bill Leff. It's Wendy Snyder. And Bill, you make fun of me for going to get cafeteria sushi.
I do, yes.
But I ran into somebody in the cafeteria who also got cafeteria sushi yesterday. Was it yesterday, Kelly?
Yeah, that was yesterday.
Kelly Leonard, you were with Second City. We read somewhere that you had stepped down, and then I hear you're kind of back with them.
Yeah, well, I stepped down from running Second City for, God, almost 30 years,
yeah.
25 years. And they were gracious enough to say, you're not hireable anywhere else. I'm a consultant for Second City, but it's kind of turning into a fairly full-time consultancy. I work a lot with the Second City Works Group. That's the group that deals with businesses and brings improv all over the country and internationally as well. And I just started hosting a podcast.
How about this? See, getting cafeteria sushi. Who knew?
It all pays off, doesn't it?
And I like podcast, that sushi, too.
He makes fun of me
you
all
really
the
do.
Time.
I do.
That's
do.
Good. So, that we, the, you know, so you remember Second City's offices burned down last summer?
Yeah.
So,
mysteriously.
Very mysteriously. Right after I stepped down.
Yep. Interesting.
Awkward.
Yeah.
That joke has been made more than once.
Uh-huh. But never as a joke.
But never
always
as
an accusation.
No, yeah. Yep. Truly. truth and comedy. So we ended up, actually, a bunch of us ended up here. So we're on the 23rd floor of the Tribune, and I think we have the 16th as well. And literally, I was walking in one day and ran into, you know, all my buddies at WGN Radio, and they're like, come upstairs, would you want to do something? And we've been talking about, one of the things that's great about working at Second City is we do all these weird gigs. We get to meet everyone.
Yeah.
So one of the things the corporate group does, for example, is we train all the rookies in Major League Baseball. Not all of them, but a huge selection of high prospect rookies coming in.
Mm-hmm. So they know how to deal with the press?
Yes.
To be media savvy.
The press and with relatives. And, and the thing is, they used to have psychologists do it. They weren't really getting through to the young Ecuadorian ball player.
Right.
So we bring in a diverse group of comedians who enact scenes that they're going to go through. They're funny, so they kind of stick in the brain. And then we use improv exercises to show them how to deflect, move the conversation.
That Brilliant. Is genius.
Isn't that great?
Yeah. Yeah.
So we do that. We work with the Department of Education. We've done stuff to try to bring principals together with, you know, board members and with teachers and unions and all that stuff. So we always get in these conversations. So the idea here was, why don't we sit down for a half hour with cool people who maybe have some connection with the improv stuff we teach at Second City? And we launched this a few weeks ago, and I've talked to everyone from Michael Slaby, who is the chief technology officer for Obama for America.
Mm-hmm.
Just talked to Christy Hefner mm-hmm. about leadership. Talked to Neil Stevenson, who runs IDEO, the design firm here in Chicago. Fascinating conversation. And we got a bunch of cool ones coming up as well.
What a great idea. It's called Getting to Yes And. I have to be honest with you, I don't know what that means.
So yes and is like ground zero rule of improvisation. And the idea there is improv is making something out of nothing, which we all do every day. The fastest way to not make something out of nothing is by saying no. And you can't just do it by saying yes. You have to say yes and. You have to affirm and contribute.
Further the storyline a little bit.
Explore and heighten. It's the cardinal rule. So if you're in a business meeting and you work with someone who says no all the time, they're a nightmare. And they're not forwarding your business.
Mm-hmm.
And conversely, you probably love your coworker who yes ands your ideas. We're all like thinking now, who is that person, right?
Yeah.
Who we work with. But
I'm just thinking of myself as a mom because all I do is say no.
Okay.
No.
This is hugely important because, you know, my wife has worked at Second City as long as I have, and she's a comedy professor. And we have started to apply yes and, or we did to our parenting. Huge success. In part,
I bet.
Well, in part because you're going to get to know if no is the right answer. But by saying yes and letting these ideas live a little bit, and I'll give you an example. My daughter, we were coming back from California, and it was like an early morning flight, and she's like, I want the aisle seat. And I'm like, no. And then we got into an argument, you know, like a 15-minute
Because
argument.
You stopped her dead in her tracks.
Yep. And
that's
then
it.
Wasn't happy. Conversely, I actually thought about it. I'm like, I should have said, yes, and when you buy the seats, you get to pick the seats. Do you want to buy the seat?
Oh my God, that's genius!
And then I would have been a lesson.
No, but yes. It sounds better, and it makes them guilty,
and teaches them something about money and value,
right.
and the reason for this. And I was like, you know, I thought about it too late.
take another flight.
Yeah, I wrote a book that came out a year ago called Yes And: Lessons from the Second City, which is all about this stuff. And I was thinking about, I actually pitched this to my kids. I said, I'm thinking about writing a parenting book. And they both looked at me and went, that is a terrible idea.
You'll make some money from it.
No, they butted me right away.
Oh, I think that's a great idea. I did learn that, too. It's just, you know, as a parent, and Bill, your kids are beyond that, but when you still have young kids who ask you stuff and you want to make them happy, but you do have to say no sometimes. It does start a fight, and there is a way to do it where it's still, they're not going to get what they want, but you're kind of letting them, you're commiserating with them.
Yep.
Like, I know that stinks, but maybe next time, or just there's a way to do it.
Well, it's, you know, and I give these talks to businesses all the time, and there's always a dude in the back of the audience, and it's a dude in a suit and a tie who raises his hand at the end of my yes and lecture and says, if I yes anded every stupid idea that came in my office, I'd get no work done.
Oh.
And there's two things I know about that guy. He's a nightmare to work with.
Yeah.
And he's missed the point, because yes and is about the front end of innovation. It's the first 5 minutes. Just yes and for the first 5 minutes. Afterwards, it's fine.
Sure.
Because when you're saying no to an idea, you're actually saying no to a person, and you say no enough to a person, they ain't going to offer any more ideas.
Yeah. Yep. So true.
When you're a wise sage.
You're a wise sage, Kelly.
That's what I'm going for.
When you're interviewing people, and of course, that's going to be a huge part of your podcast.
Yeah.
When you're interviewing people, how many times do you think back to your dad, Roy Leonard, who's one of the best that ever did this ever? You must have learned some very, very valuable lessons from that man.
Yeah, I do all the time, actually. And there's two things that I apply right away, which was Roy always read the book.
Yeah.
So I prepare. I have at least 3 pages of notes with quotes I've read up on whoever is coming in. And then I listen to what they're saying. And it was funny. My son came in. My 18-year-old son came into one of the interviews, and he was like, you know, you were better when you weren't going off your notes, but you were just listening and you riffed. And I'm like, yep, you're right. So I have the notes there in case, you know, the conversation stops. But really, I'm trying to listen to what they're saying and follow it up.
Mm-hmm.
And invariably, that leads to it's a little scarier because you're maneuvering around. But
it's
also
a conversation.
Yeah, and you're making discoveries. You know, Kurt Vonnegut said the act of writing is discovery. And so really, that's about being creative. And that's what we're talking about, because businesses desire to be creative and they don't really know how.
Sure.
No one's teaching them. You don't get the manual. Even like, did you guys get the creative manual when
you
started the gig?
Of course we got it.
No, none of us got. I didn't get it when I went to Second City.
We should write one.
Oh, do that. You should be sages. It pays real well.
It's very hard.
Yeah. It is very difficult.
I'm never going to say no again because of you, Kelly Leonard.
Fake it till you make it.
Kelly Leonard is here. We're talking about a whole bunch of stuff. If you want to jump in, 312-981-7200 could do it. It's Bill and Wendy on WGN. Kelly Leonard is here, creative advisor for Second City. He's got a podcast going on WGN Plus called Getting to Yes And. Also co-wrote the book Yes And just last year. Soon to be a major motion picture, Kelly?
Oh, yeah, absolutely.
Jake Gyllenhaal?
Animated, Pixar.
Yeah.
Real excited. They're changing it a bit.
Well, they always do.
Yeah.
It's for the better of everyone.
I'm now a panda.
Good. That's perfect.
All right. So you were telling us some things off the air, and I don't know how much you want to get into.
We can talk about anything.
Okay. Well, you were saying how you are getting together with some other people this summer. You're going to a university, and I was fascinated by this.
Yeah. So I'm Neil Stevenson, who was my first guest on the podcast because he said yes, works for IDEO. And he had been brought in to the University of Pennsylvania by a group called the Imagination Institute. It's Dr. Scott Barry Kaufman, also a guest on the podcast, wrote a book called Wired to Create. And his partner is Martin Seligman, who a lot of people might know. He's a positive psychologist. So they've been holding what they call these genius weekends. And they bring in people from a specific kind of a creative business. They talk to them. It's scientists and these folks. And in the case of Neil, it was all design people. And then they scan their brains. And they're looking for sort of neuroscience around what makes people creative.
Mm-hmm.
So at the end of the summer, my wife and I are going to go in, and we've got some friends, Scott Dickers from The Onion, Cindy Caponera, who is a writer for Saturday Night Live, Bob Menkoff, who works at The New Yorker. He's the cartoon guy. And we're going to talk comedy. And apparently we're getting our brain scanned. That's optional. I think you're in there for like an hour and a half.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Don't you want to see what's going on up there, though?
I have mixed feelings. We talked about this off the air, right? Because, you know, here's the thing about someone was asking me to describe comedy, and I said, you know, comedy is almost always the wrong thing.
Yeah,
that,
sure.
That's what makes us laugh, is that it's not what it's supposed to be.
Yeah.
Which also means the root of most comedy is what's wrong with us.
True.
And I don't, do we want to fix that?
No, but you want to know what it is.
Yeah, not fix it, but understand it, maybe. Right?
I don't know. Sometimes understanding is the, know, that's not funny.
Yeah.
Can I tell you my problem? When I start thinking too much, I mess up. Like if we're doing, and this happens to you too, you'll be in the middle of a live read and you're in your head, you're going, I am rocking this. And as soon as you think that, you've completely messed it up because you're thinking too much about it. You got to just be.
Yeah, so there's a funny story I tell in the talks I do. We got hired by a company to do a PSA on social anxiety. And so I was asked to send out an email to all the talent at Second City to see if anyone had like a friend or a relative who suffered from social anxiety. Email goes out. 70% of the people who were on stage at Second City at that time suffered from social anxiety.
Really?
And I'm like, this is insane.
Yeah.
Because why, if you suffer from social anxiety, would you put yourself on a stage? And then why would you put yourself on stage with no script? So one of the actresses, who's very successful now on stage at the time, said to me, Kelly, what you don't understand is when I'm improvising, that's the only time I'm not anxious, because I can't think about what came before or what's coming after. I have to stay fiercely in the moment. And the person who's across from me, who's improvising, their only job is to save me. And so what I end up saying is to a lot of people is improvisation is like loud group mindfulness. It's meditation that's noisy and messy. But it's about that thing that you're talking about, which is if you want to be in a flow state, you got to stay in the moment. You just got to play.
But that makes so much sense, because there's a lot of times I can't sleep because my mind is going too fast thinking about things I have to do. But here at work, I have to put that aside.
And you're fine.
That's true. And, you know, it's funny that Sue's calling in, because Sue, you kind of had a question for Kelly Leonard regarding just this.
Hi, yes. Thank you. Good afternoon. Good timing. yes, I know in the past that Second City had a program for people that deal with social anxiety and so on, and I wondered if that's still available. Thank you.
Oh, absolutely. It's still going on. Improv for Social Anxiety. You can get information at secondcity.com and going to our training center section. Dr. Mark Pfeiffer is a guy, a psychologist who took classes at Second City, went through all the levels, and afterwards was like, man, this is immensely helpful. And he came to us and was like, why don't we create a class together? So his patients will go with him, and their group session is actually an improv class.
Oh, that's cool.
And I remember I was there the first time they did their class performance, which, you know, had the potential to be a nightmare.
Mm-hmm.
And it was the opposite. I mean, it was one of the most uplifting experiences for these folks, because they're putting themselves out there. But this is the thing that's interesting about improvisation as it relates to the sort of larger behavioral science world, which is behavioral science has taught us for decades and decades and decades that people make bad choices for themselves. And improvisation is about practice in new choices, better choices, different choices.
Terrific. Well, sorry to interrupt.
No.
Thank you so much for your time. And I will definitely look that up, and thrilled that it is still going on. And congratulations on all your years with Second City.
Thanks so much.
Thanks, Sue. Appreciate it.
When did you get into the whole psychological brain vision of it? Because with an ADHD family, me, the kids, I've looked into a lot of stuff. I know Martin Seligman's work, because Marty Seligman, it's all about positive stuff.
Mm-hmm.
And I haven't learned it or mastered it, but I know of it. When did you make the connection from improv to how your brain works and the psychology of it? Because it's totally connected.
Right. When my much smarter college professor wife told me about it. I mean, if Anne is listening, this is what's going through her head. Oh, nice use of my stuff. So when you work with someone for 3 decades at Second City, and we go home together at the end of the evening, we end up talking about this stuff. And Anne is, she's a great teacher and she's brilliant. And I have a way of framing things. That's the producer in me. So we're kind of a lethal combination that way. And she will make these little discoveries and be like, you need to read this book. You need to read that book. And I'll go do it. And then, you know, figure out a business application for it. And she goes back to the lab and finds the next thing. So there's a lot of connectivity, and that's what the podcast is all about. You know, finding these sort of interesting, divergent thinkers who, you know, you never thought improv would show up.
you know, and then suddenly it does.
Yeah. How does somebody handle it, Kelly, when all of a sudden you're put in a position, like if all of a sudden you're working with other people at Second City and you think to yourself, well, I was the funniest kid in my grade school and high school, but now I'm in the big leagues. I'm playing with 8 or 9 other people that were the best at what they did, and now I'm part of that.
Right.
It's hard to handle that sometimes, isn't it?
Well, it can be, and I mean, I would suggest that the undoing of certain personalities who thought they were going to get on Saturday Night Live came when they couldn't give up the ego.
Yeah.
Because it's not really, when you go to Second City, we're not teaching you to tell jokes.
Yeah.
It's more about finding your own POV as it relates to other people. I'm going to steal my wife's
POV,
stuff again.
I'm sorry.
Point of view.
Okay, sorry.
Point of view.
I am a newbie
Pav.
At all of this.
We say Pav in the business. We say Pav.
Do we say Pav?
Yeah, Pav.
You guys are improv.
We're improv guys.
We're comedy
guys.
Know, yes.
You know. Yep. My wife often gets asked, can you make someone funny? You know, she runs comedy school. And she's like, well, that's the wrong question, because really it's not about whether I can be funny, it's whether the audience is laughing.
Yeah.
So in fact, comedy is something that's in between audience and person. And that's a very different way to think about the work, because that means you have to think about the other and how it relates back and forth. And that also means, you know, audiences are different. You know, what plays in Peoria doesn't
right.
always play in Chicago.
No, hardly ever. But look what Saturday Night Live has done over the past several decades. They blend in people that are trained through improv
yep.
actors. And they mix them in with stand-up comics who are trained a very different way
right.
to do a set-up punchline-type show.
Totally.
And when it's working good, but there are times when that blend doesn't quite mesh.
Yeah, sure. I mean, you're sacrificing the sort of improv ensemble thing for someone who can do a killer Trump,
yeah.
you know, or Bush or whatever. And then there's the occasional, you know, actor who can, you know, swing it all.
Yeah.
You know, Will Ferrell being a great example of someone who could do on his own and do it with the rest of you know, the ensemble in an incredible way. But I think at your root, you know, with your question, a lot of early improv classes are about breaking bad habits and about, you know, sort of getting rid of the fact that you don't always listen. Most people don't listen. You don't really know how to collaborate. You think you need to offer up ideas in a certain way when that's not the case. So we break that down, unlock, you know, the sort of thing that your point of view and what makes you funny. And then you can start the work of seeing if you're really good at this stuff or you just want to do it to have fun.
Mm-hmm. My son is a junior in high school, tried out for the senior improv club. And since Bill had done that for so many years, I asked for advice and you gave me great advice to give him. But you didn't use the getting to yes and, but the concept was exactly the same. If someone throws an idea out there, and even though in your head you may think, oh, this one's funnier, you have to stick with the idea.
Yeah.
Also, tell them about the door.
If you're in a scene and somebody establishes that you're in a living room and the door is there, make sure the door is there because the audience subliminally will remember somehow.
Oh, that's a good one.
A minute ago, that guy came through the door, but now it's over there.
Yeah, you can't walk through the table.
No,
and there's always the thing when, you know, someone is in an improv scene holding a glass in their hand and then suddenly the glass isn't there and that's all you can think about.
Right.
I mean, oh, yeah.
It's tricky business.
Yeah.
It's not easy, but it becomes effortless when you know all the rules. And, you know, it is really no different than Michael Jordan shooting the free throws. Shooting thousands and thousands of free throws.
Yeah.
When you improvise over and over again, then you can just get in this, what we call the flow state, right? Which is a creative psychological term. We just call it improvising. But it really is about sort of being in the moment and playing, and that's where you make the cool discoveries.
You are amazing, and you're, what did I say, a wise sage?
A wise sage.
Yeah,
a wise sage.
I'm going to quote you on that.
Fine. I want to read Yes and you can get it wherever your favorite books are sold, Amazon
Absolutely.
Too.
It's still there.
And check out Kelly Leonard's podcast on WGN Plus. You can go to WGNplus.com. It's called Getting to Yes And. I'm going to be listening. You got a new listener.
Awesome. Thanks,
Thanks, Kelly. Appreciate it. A quick break and then some news. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN. Steve, thank you very much. It's Bill Leff and it's Wendy Snyder. And if at any point during the show you want to talk to us, talk about us, whatever you want to do, 312-981-7200, feel free.
At least do it to our faces.
At least do it to our faces. Did you hear what Kelly Osbourne did a couple days ago?
She changed her hair color?
She does that every 20 minutes, Wendy. Oh. She did definitely change her hair color. But in addition to that, you know, her family, the Osbourne family, as you know, is in turmoil right now. Her parents have been married for a good long time, Ozzy and Sharon Osbourne, but it has come to light that Ozzy was having extramarital affairs, right?
Did he even know he was? I'm serious.
I think he knew he was.
Are you sure? I know it was his hairdresser, but did he think it was Sharon just with a different hairstyle?
Can I tell you what people... This is something I've heard, and I have no evidence to prove this in any way, but this is what I've heard. I keep hearing people that have had encounters with him and know him on different levels, and they all say the same thing about him, that he's extremely aware of everything going on around him. Whenever you see him or you hear him, you go, I don't know if this guy's going to make it till the weekend. Listen to this guy.
Shane.
He's incoherent. He sounds like he's from another galaxy. And you go, ah, this Ozzy Osbourne, he's not going to be with us much longer. But I've heard so many people, like when this story came to light a few weeks ago, I heard so many people go, yeah, we talked to him a few weeks ago, a month ago. He's great. Ozzy, you wouldn't believe how smart he is.
Who
he's
says
sharp
that?
As a tack.
Who has been quoted as saying that?
I was listening.
Howard Stern.
It's not Howard Stern, but it's somebody in that bracket. I was listening to a show on the satellite radio
Cheater.
Where they had him on recently, and they said, when he's on the air, it's what you
it's
were
like
just doing. And then he's off air, and he's like all business, and he knows what's going on.
Really?
Yeah. I found that shocking, too.
I don't believe Opie or Anthony.
I found that shocking. All right. Well, now Kelly Osbourne decided to tweet. There's this woman that Ozzy was having the, do I have to say alleged affair if everyone's admitting to it? I'll still say alleged, even though all parties involved are copying to the fact that he had an affair. So he had a mistress, and her name is Michelle Pugh, P-U-G-H. So Kelly Osbourne, who's very upset that the family is now, you know, splitting up over this, decided to tweet this woman's phone number out. It said, here's what her tweet read.
This is Kelly tweeting this?
Kelly Osbourne tweeted this in between hair dyeing. Anyone looking for a cheap, chunky, low lights blowout and a, another
low
word.
Low lights for your hair.
Yeah.
Blowout like a blow dry.
Right. Anyone looking for a cheap, chunky, low lights blowout and then a word that's similar to blowout but not.
Oh, because up till then I was into it. I wanted a chunky blowouts.
Right.
I mean, chunky, because I like the chunky stripes in your hair.
So chunky refers in this
like
case
thick
to the
low lights. Like I have blonde hair, I get dark
I got it.
Put
okay.
in. So that's what.
I didn't understand the first part of the tweet. I understood the second part of the tweet.
Well, that's the universal
right.
language.
The second part was much easier for me to understand. Anyone looking for a cheap, chunky, low lights blowout and a call, and then she gave this woman's number on her
Twitter
account.
Well, she broke up the family.
I know, but is that what you do?
No.
I mean, there's hundreds of thousands of people following. I know I find that hard to believe too, but there are hundreds of thousands of people following Kelly Osbourne who now have this woman's phone number, and some of them may have called her.
Oh, she's already got a new phone by now. Are you kidding me? The first call that came in, she'd be like, "Darn it!"
Right.
And she'd go get a
right.
new number.
I would think you'd have to, right?
Yeah, I mean, nothing matters anymore. It's not. I can't get rid of my landline, neither can you. And part of it is, and my sister's like that because it's like the number we had since we were a kid kind
yeah.
of thing.
Yeah.
But really, nothing's nostalgic anymore.
Do you remember when Donald Trump gave out, I want to say Lindsey Graham's home phone number or cell phone number, didn't he? Didn't he give out Lindsey Graham's number?
I can't remember whose
right?
it was.
I'm pretty sure it was Lindsey Graham's. I don't think that could ever end well. I mean, Trump's Trump, so he can just laugh it off. It's just another thing that I do. But a lot of people are divided over whether or not this act that Kelly Osbourne did is or isn't bullying. Is
it's
this
not
bullying?
Bullying. It's bullying that she was messing around with a married man, so she deserves her number out.
Whatever happens, happens after that. You broke the rule,
that's right.
Michelle Pugh. You get what you have coming to you.
773 says, good for Kelly. I'd do it too. I think, really... Again, nothing. This she'll get a new number.
Right.
In this fast-paced age of social media,
right.
if something happens, because I'm sure this isn't the first time people have given numbers out. You mentioned Donald Trump.
Yeah.
Go get a new number. Who cares?
I guess you'd have to, right?
I'd do it if I was.
So now the mom, Sharon Osbourne, you think to yourself, well, I bet Sharon read her the riot act, as the kids like to say.
Well, she said, thanks, honey.
She was fine with it. She did not reprimand her daughter, Kelly Osbourne.
Why would she, Bill?
This woman...
Okay, this woman was with her husband.
Right, right.
I think she got off easy
right.
by Kelly just giving out a phone number.
Maybe. Here's what it says here. Now, Sharon, as you know, is one of the hosts of The Talk. This is a show that's like The View, where they get five people and they say,
they
go, and then they all talk at the same time.
I don't get it.
Sharon Osbourne commented on this yesterday on her show, The Talk. It says she was wearing her wedding ring on the show. She laughed at her 31-year-old daughter's tweet, bragging that she has the best sense of humor. In cases like this, what can you do but laugh, said the 63-year-old TV personality. Kelly is so funny. She loves her mom. She loves her dad so much. This according to Sharon Osbourne. Go on.
Someone says, I agree with you, Kelly. You mess with my family and you deal with me. Someone said, why doesn't she get text out her father's phone number, too? Because it's her father.
But her dad, I mean.
But it's blood.
Yeah.
You got to blame the other woman. I know it takes two to tango or whatever they do.
It takes two to tango.
To headbang.
It takes two to bango.
But, you know, it's if this woman didn't exist, I guess Ozzy would have just found someone else.
I always think that if you're in the world of rock and roll, the opportunities are probably there constantly.
Yeah, but so...
I'm sure this is the only time he has strayed, right?
You know what? It may be...
Do you think it is?
Listen, he has been with Sharon forever.
Yeah.
And she has guided him and helped him along. And just because, you know, the temptation and the opportunity is there.
You think this is the only time Ozzy Osbourne ever cheated on his wife?
I
can't imagine it.
But I mean, rock and rollers have the temptation. So do baseball players and hockey players.
Right.
Not everybody acts on them.
Right. Right.
You don't have many temptations.
I've not had it. We had the temptations on. And even they said, no, thank you. Sharon then added, I'm always proud of my girl. What are you going to be mad? She's an adult. And she is. She's 31 years old.
She's already 31?
She's 31. Yeah.
God.
And that's the same amount of hair colors she's had since May the 1st, Wendy. However, not all of Kelly's 4 million Twitter followers found the message as funny as her mom, Sharon, did. Here's a sampling. I hate your father, not the woman. He did this to your family. I mean, that's part of the debate is it his fault? Is it the mistress's fault? This woman, Michelle Pugh. I believe it is both of their faults, don't you?
But that's her father. She's not going to throw her father under the bus.
I would. I would blame, if this were me, if I were one of the Osborne kids, boy, that's a weird thought.
I know. Did you
that's
let that
weird,
breathe for a minute?
Nope. As I said it, I just went, I don't see that happening.
I watched your face just completely
I was puzzled by my own example.
Self-doubt came upon your face.
Right, that doesn't make sense. But let's say, for the sake of argument, I was one of the Osborne kids. If it were my dad, Ozzy, that cheated on my mom, I would put him as much, if not more, to blame. I would put him more to blame than I would this woman, Michelle Pugh.
Well, I would be mad at him.
Yeah.
But then ultimately, you can't be mad at your father forever.
I don't know.
Oh, if it God. It's
breaking up the family, the Osborne
family,
as we know it.
The family was pretty broken up.
Maybe.
When's the last time Sharon and Ozzy went on a date or held hands?
I don't know.
She's so busy. You know what it is?
She is busy.
It's her talk.
The show, The Talk?
Yeah, her attention away from Ozzy, and he needed the attention.
He had to stray.
So he did that to get her attention, and he got her attention.
Yeah. So after this tweet comes through from one of her Twitter followers, Kelly Osbourne, hate your father, but not the woman. He did this to your family. And then I left this part out again, it says. So she's inferring that there's been more than one incident. Kelly wrote back, are you in my family? No, you are not, in giant capital letters. You have no idea what she did, also in giant capital letters. So keep your high, mighty opinions to yourself, that part in small letters. I would have, once I hit the tab, once I hit the all caps tab, I wouldn't let up on the all caps.
You can't go back?
No.
Once you go cap, you can't go back?
Once you go cap, you never go back. That's what David Kaplan used to say when he was working with us, remember?
And where is he now?
I don't know. I think he's out of the business.
I still don't. I mean, yeah, you'd be mad at your dad as well as the other woman, but I mean, that's your dad, so ultimately, hopefully, you'll forgive him someday.
Maybe.
It'd be tough.
It would be tough.
Who knows what she's done? That's all I got to say.
All right, that's fair.
I don't know for a fact, but I'm just saying it's your blood is thicker than a hairdresser. I don't know.
That's
I really
true
like
too.
Hairdressers. Because once you find a good one, man.
Right, you don't want to mess it up.
Maybe that's more important than family.
All right, we need to take a break. If you have thoughts on this or anything that we'll discuss in the future, please call us at 312-981-7200. It's Bill and Wendy, WGN. All right, we're telling you the story. I'm sure you're aware of this. The Osborne family is in turmoil right now.
They're driving off the rails, Bill.
They're driving off the rails. That's the perfect way to describe it. Ozzy Osborne has had, it says here in the story, alleged mistress, an alleged affair. So I guess we still have to say alleged, although I was under the impression that they had copped to it. Ozzy had an alleged affair with this woman, Michelle Pugh. The daughter, Kelly, then tweeted the woman's number. She tweeted this on Tuesday or on Monday. Anyone looking for a cheap, chunky lowlights and a blowout and a, and another word that sounds like blowout but isn't, can call this number. And then she gave the woman's phone number. So we're trying to figure out if that was in anyone's best interest.
Well, and I know that Kelly was hurting.
Sure.
And she tweeted it. And Angela, you think this is a bad thing?
Yes, I definitely do. I mean, it shouldn't be as blasé and nonchalant as people think. Cyberbullying is a big issue, and you can easily say, oh, change your number. But with that number, people online can obtain a lot more information having that personal number. So it's just a ripple effect. I think it's unacceptable. She may be hurting, but that's just crossing the line.
How is that cyberbullying? She didn't tell people to call. I know people are going
she
to. Did.
Well, she implied that a call to her will get you some things, you know.
Because it starts the process. Like you said, she implied it. She provided that personal information. And like I said, with that, even I, using a phone number, I can find so much more. If I'm willing to pay a little bit of money on the internet, you can get home addresses. You can get so much more information just from that one piece. And people are mean. There are a lot of mean people in the world who have nothing to do with their time but be extremely mean to other people because it makes them feel better.
I so badly want to ask you if you're dating a married man, because it sounds like you're sticking up for the hairdresser, because, you know, that's not a nice thing to do either.
No, I am not sticking up for the hairdresser. I have dealt with years for teens and cyberbullying. I've been an advocate for them, and I know how people don't really think about the ramifications of what somebody can say online or via a phone or via a voicemail, how it affects the psyche. And so that's what I'm supporting right now. I'm supporting anti-cyberbullying, and putting that number out there is just the first step towards it.
The article that I saw first, not this one, this is from ET Online, but the first one said, is Kelly Osborne a bully? And I thought, what? No, she's not a bully. And then I read the story and I thought to myself, this does fit the bracket of being a bully. If somebody didn't like you, Wendy, and put your phone number on Twitter and you got all these phone calls, you go, oh, I've been bullied.
But it's more than not liking someone. That's, you know, and this isn't
this
a teenager being cyberbullied either, Angela, because I agree with you. There's too much stuff going on, and I think we should just get rid of the internet.
The internet's gone.
It
so
should be.
People hurt no matter what age they are.
I mean, understand that, but, you know, this woman was responsible for a lot of hurting in the Osborne family as well.
So she deserves to be called and to be contacted.
I don't know about deserves, but I can see where it would happen. Would I do it? No, because I feel like that's your personal business. And I have to be honest with you, I'm surprised it doesn't happen more on social media. I really am.
Yeah. Yeah.
Not that it's right, because I think it's wrong, but I'm surprised it doesn't happen more.
I hope you both see it this way. This is a revenge tactic
right.
from Kelly Osborne, right? That's all it is.
It was intentional.
Sure.
Mm-hmm.
Do we know that it's even her right number? Because if
is.
I was Kelly, that's what I would have been off by one number just to make people think I'm really mean, but I wasn't really
no,
that mean.
No, it was the right number. It was definitely the right number. Yeah. All right. Well, we thank you, Angela. We appreciate
it. You're welcome.
It. Thanks
and what,
so much.
Do you have a website or something you want to give out about the anti-bullying message you're doing? Because I think that's a great idea. I feel really sorry for young people today with Instagram and Snapchat and all this stuff, because bullying's just going to get worse.
Sure, definitely. Teenadvocates.org is one, and that's actually just a hotline and a way for teens to be able to either chat with somebody immediately 24 hours a day or give a call. And if they just want to visit that teenadvocates.org, then that is an option for them if they ever feel the pressure or ever feel like they're alone.
You know what, Angela, hang on. We'll get your phone number. Kevin, can you get Angela's phone number? And maybe we can talk to you at greater depth about this.
Sure.
Thanks, Angela.
See, that's how you win people over, Bill. I did not give Angela's phone number out.
That's my fear. You were going to tweet her phone number.
No,
that was my fear.
I thought, you know what?
Don't do that.
There's a lot. Cyberbullying sucks. Teenadvocates.org. Maybe we should talk to her about her mission.
I'm in. All right, let's do this. We have
that's
to take
how you
a
turn
break.
Them around.
That's it. You found the key.
We're going to end up booking every listener by the end of the year.
Right. That's our goal. All right. A quick break, some news, and then more thoughts on this and other topics. We're at 312-981-7200. It's Bill Leff and Wendy Snyder on WGN.
Kim, you know what it is. Steve Bertrand left early today, and he sabotaged you.
See
he
what
does
happens
that to
when
us.
You do a guy a favor?
I know.
No good deed shall go unpunished, Kim. You know that. All right. We were talking about the Osborne family. Boy, are they in some turmoil. Ozzy allegedly had an affair going with a mistress, a woman named Michelle Pugh. His daughter, Kelly, went to social media and tweeted out her phone number, her cell phone number. And then, of course, she got a lot of upsetting phone calls. Her mom, Sharon, is on her daughter's side saying, "That's my Kelly. She's a very funny woman." So we're trying to determine whether or not this was in anyone's best interest.
And we had, I believe, Angela who called in and said it's cyberbullying and no one should do it. And I guess it is when I think about it.
To disclose somebody's cell phone number on Twitter.
Yeah, but honestly, I feel like nothing is sacred anymore. You could practically find anything about anybody anywhere.
You could, but she just
made it easier.
Fed it to hundreds of thousands of people.
Well, she didn't like the fact that... Oh, no.
Don't blame me for that.
That was me. I hit the wrong button. I'm trying to get to you, James. The whole show is okay. The whole show is going to fizzle out now till 3 o'clock when Ro either saves it or not. So we were talking about Ozzy, and is it cyberbullying? I kind of get why Kelly did it.
Yeah, can you guys hear me?
Yeah.
Great. Yeah. So I kind of get why she did it too, and I gotta respectfully disagree that it was. I don't think that it was cyberbullying because. I think if you're going to get involved in some sort of affair like that, you should be thinking about, you know, what sort of repercussions could happen. And also the Osbournes are a pretty high profile family. So it's not like it was going to be like you got to know that something's going to come out of that at some point. So I don't know if that it was necessarily cyberbullying. And I sort of kind of side with his daughter because I'd be pretty irritated too if I figured out that information.
All right, what about what Bill said? Like, you know, why doesn't she tweet out her dad's phone number too? Because he's as much to blame. And I say
if
it's because
it's more so.
But it's blood. That's her dad.
Right. Yeah. I don't know. That's a good question. I don't know. I would be pretty mad at him too. I think they're both equally to blame. And I heard what you guys were saying earlier. From her perspective, you know, you could almost be more mad at him because that's your dad who's doing that behind your back and your family's back.
I would be more mad, seriously, if this were me, I'd be more mad at my dad in this case.
At my dad, yeah.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Yeah.
But I also would, I would also kind of hate the person that got in between and did all this too, so.
Takes two to tango.
Yeah, it does, absolutely. And I could kind of see her, was it right to tweet the phone number? Absolutely not, but it was probably more wrong to be having the affair in the first place.
It's called karma.
Yep.
Right. Yeah. And, you know, like if it was just some random family and somebody tweeted it out, like if I tweeted that out, nobody would see it. But
they're celebrities.
The Osbournes.
Sure.
Yeah, exactly.
All right.
If you're going to get involved with, you know, high names, you got to be careful with things like that.
Very true. James, thank you. Have a great day. By the way, I'm going to learn to tango all by myself just to disprove that phrase. I'm going to take single tango lessons by myself just so no one can say
it. Is that what you're calling it?
Yes. Yes.
I hear you're a pretty good dancer.
All right.
Hi, Janice.
Hey, Sharon and Kelly, I just think they are really, you know, dominant personalities and hardcore women.
Yeah.
To see them firsthand when I went to a pre-Emmy show a few years ago. And Ozzy's been cheating on her for years, and he physically abused her, which is, you know, she has stated. So I think... You know, she has some celebrity status now, so I think she can, her and Kelly can bully this hairdresser. I think that a lot of crap goes on, and I think that, you know, I feel like, you know, if it wasn't the hairdresser, it would be somebody else. It could be hired help or someone else. And when I went to a pre-Emmy show, I was like 7.5 months pregnant in L.A. My husband was getting his master's, and we got to see them walk in, their family, and they just looked like the most ungrateful family.
Really?
I mean, we were in the backstage. Nobody was allowed to look at them or give them any. This is before the Osbournes went on the show.
Yeah.
Nobody was able to, like, look at them in the eye. And I was, like, 7.5 months pregnant, and Sharon glared at me. And so I think it's so funny that she's on all of these, all this media, that she's such a friendly Mary Poppins lady when she's really a tough cookie. I mean,
I never thought she was Mary Poppins like at all. I mean, she seems like a tough broad, you know?
Yeah. Yeah.
Because her father helped Ozzy, you know, get famous, and she was along for the ride, and she was a second or third wife herself. So I think that, you know, Kelly went on the bad bandwagon to be mean to other people, whether it was at E or other, you know, venues. And Sharon is just, I really think she is just a heartless person. And I think her husband, he looked very brain damaged. He looked like he was either drugged out or had Parkinson's. My husband and I are like, he looks like he has Parkinson's. I mean, the way he walked, because he got to see with no cameras. And, you know, at this point, I think it's more that she knows she has celebrity status. And whether it's bullying or not, I mean, anybody can get anybody's number, but I think it's just kind of mean girl. This is not, I'm sure this is not the first time in the last decade that Kelly has seen her father in cahoots with other women.
Yeah, but Twitter wasn't around then, Janice.
Yeah.
It complicates it. It does. Janice, thank you. I appreciate the phone call.
And Kathy has a different view on this. Hi, Kathy.
Hi, how are you?
You know, there are so many huge topics in this world, and, you know, everybody wants to talk about the Osbournes, but we can relate to this. What do you think what Kelly did?
I kind of agree with the woman who texted you that she was on her side, because if somebody messed with my family, mm-hmm. I would do whatever I had to, right, wrong, or otherwise, to protect them.
All is fair in love and war.
So yeah. True. You should quote that,
I'm going to copyright that. I'm going to.
I mean, this is my family. This is who I grew up with. This is who loved me, who nurtured me through my life. I'm going to protect them no matter what I have to do.
Right, right.
You know, maybe he was wrong in what he did, but how
still
many
her
people
dad.
Are?
Yeah, we all make mistakes.
Yeah.
Exactly. Sometimes bigger than others.
Yep.
Exactly. So, right. I mean, to me, family comes first.
All right.
Thanks, Kathy.
Thanks. Can I read you another? This is an interesting tweet. Now. The Twitter war here was started by Kelly Osbourne when she tweeted the tweet I mentioned earlier. If anyone's looking for a cheap, chunky lowlights and a blowout that's hair related and a something that sounds like blowout that's not hair related, call and then this woman's phone number. So she got a bunch of tweets back, and one of them said this: why would it only be one person's fault? It takes two to tango. As we've mentioned many times, for some reason, you never hear the tango referred to in any context unless people are cheating at each other on each other. And then everybody's talking about tangoing.
Why don't they ever say it takes two to jitterbug?
Right. It takes two to Charleston.
See?
They're both guilty. She knew that he was married. That was from a tweeter, a texter. Then Kelly responded, my father is almost 70. Have you ever heard of elder abuse?
Now,
I don't think it's fair to pull elder abuse into this. This isn't elder abuse. He was a willing participant.
Mick Jagger's 70-something. That
right.
wouldn't be elder abuse.
He was a willing participant in this
so
alleged
it seems.
Affair.
This just in, 630 has texted me to say Michelle Pugh just tweeted out my phone number.
Oh, my gosh. Why would she do that?
I hope I find somebody cool.
A quick break and then more show. Bill and Wendy, WGN.
Ozzy and Sharon.
You know what I miss? I miss the days when Ozzy Osbourne used to just go up on stage and bite the head off of a bat, and then his daughter would tweet the phone number of that bat, and if you wanted to call him, you could.
To offer condolences?
Right.
Isn't it too late?
At that
point.
Should
do it first. You could warn the bat.
Right.
My dad is going to bite your head off.
Right.
Don't go to the show.
Right. I miss those days. Simpler times.
Hi, Paul. It's a crazy world in which we live, huh?
Oh, it's insane. Just coming out of Chicago right now, but that's another story. A couple years ago, I caught my ex-girlfriend, fiance at the time,
yikes,
doing some stuff. And I went out after the guy and said, hey, ladies, for a good time, go ahead and call this dude. You know, he'll take care of every need you've got.
And where did you post? Did you post this somewhere?
This is when Facebook was just starting out.
Mm.
And all of a sudden, within about 2 days later, I had a warrant out for my arrest for terroristic threats. And the guy said he felt threatened because I put his number out there. So I spent a week in jail.
What?
A week in jail because I put his private number out there to the public.
What was the formal charge? Was it making terroristic threats?
Excuse me, didn't mean to do that.
That's right, you're fine.
Yeah, it was terroristic threats. It was harassment.
Yeah.
That's what it was, harassment. There was no, and there's two sides of every story, but I have no reason to lie to you here. There was no, I'm going to whoop you. There's no, you know, whatever. It's like, okay, dude, you want to pound your chest? Where? Let me pound my chest, too. And I went ahead and did that. And that was the only thing, thinking, okay, ha-ha, this will be over, whatever. And next thing I know, like I said, I've got the cops knocking on the door, and I spent a week in jail, and I was put on probation for 2 months thereafter. So it just infuriates me that she's, Kelly's having this girl power moment, and Sharon's like, ha, 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 ha. My
right.
daughter, ha, 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 ha.
Yeah.
I'm like, you know what? There's nothing funny about that, you know? I mean, your father should be the man and grow a pair and be a man and know how to respect his wife and his family. You know, Ozzy's just as equally of an idiot as this woman. And how did Kelly even get this woman's number? The audacity of her.
My guess is she saw it on her dad's phone, is my guess, right?
Oh. Well, Kelly needs to go to jail, or she needs to pay a fine or something, too. But I know she's not going to because she's Kelly Osbourne. But, I mean, you know, I'm speechless. It has its repercussions. I don't think we're going to see it with her, though.
Paul, why'd you spend a week in jail? I mean, wasn't there a bail set? I mean, did you not have money to get out? Because really, a week in jail for posting
that
a phone number on
extreme.
Facebook?
And you explained to the judge the background in the story. You said this guy was messing around with my girlfriend, and that didn't matter?
Yes. What he said, and what the attorney said, what the state's attorney said, that he felt so threatened because now he's had this number for such a long time, and I put it out there, and he was getting all these phone calls, and he felt violated. And he felt threatened, and the judge just said, okay, well, then fine. You don't do that. You don't, the exact words he said. This
did you edit yourself, or did the gods above us edit you?
We didn't hear exactly what was said there, Paul. What was said?
Oh, I don't remember the exact words that were said, but he just said that if you're going to threaten somebody, if you're going to have the audacity to do something like that and invade someone's privacy, then you don't have something about you don't have any morals or values.
Wow.
The bond was, I remember at that time, $50,000. So 10% of 50 is what, five?
$5,000.
So and that's something couldn't just whip out of my pocket.
Yeah, sure. A lot of people can't. Paul, we got to run. Is everything cool now?
That's it.
You're all right now?
We're cool.
Are they broken up?
Checks. Oh yeah, we're totally broken up.
No, are they broken up?
Who cares?
Are they broken up?
She found somebody else, and I don't know what it was. But thank you for letting me vent. I'll send it.
Sure. His phone? What's that guy's phone number?
I gotta go.
No, don't do it. Don't do it.
All right, last call on this, and it is Mike. Hi, Mike. We only have about a minute here.
Hi, how are you guys? So I feel Kelly has every right to put the number out because she's angry. That's like a knee-jerk reaction. But I blame her followers for calling. What right is it for them to call? This is an Osbourne problem.
But they're fans of Kelly Osbourne's, and subliminally she was saying, hey, if you're a fan of mine and you support me, this woman ruined my family. Here's her number. Do with it what you will. So they were just kind of following somebody that they're a fan of.
Right. Well, that's just the society we live in now. Everyone feels entitled that they should be involved in everything.
Yeah.
Mike, tell me the truth. When you heard Jenny's got your number, 867-5309, you didn't call it?
I called it every day and got nobody.
That's sad. They should have put somebody there.
Real quick.
Yeah.
I know you say it takes two to tango, but it only takes one to do the curly shuffle.
That's so true.
Thank you, Mike.
Thanks, Mike. That's true. We've had several people texting us because we're trying to figure out why that's the phrase. Why is it always two to tango? It's never it takes two to waltz. What's with the
no,
other
dancer?
No, it
does take two to waltz.
It does.
But we said, why doesn't anyone say it takes two to jitterbug? And you said to... It
takes two to Charleston.
But you can jitterbug in Charleston by one.
Right.
But you need two to waltz.
You always do. A good waltz has two.
Unless you're waltzing Matilda.
Well then, all right. Thanks, everybody, for contributing and helping us through that very difficult time.
And your refund will be in the mail soon.
Refunds are coming. It's Bill and Wendy WGN.